That's my Glock. It's a 40 S&W.
Oh, okay. Is that right?
No, my EDC is actually in my pocket. The reason why I got the EDC in my pocket and these out is because someone lives underneath Chris, so you cannot down is not a safe direction to unload or reload, so I have to do it outside.
This is important stuff he needs to learn.
If you want to unload a gun safely here, you would have to get like a 5-gallon bucket, fill it up with sand, cut a hole in it, and then stick it in that sand bucket. Oh, sorry. Would have this issue, would stop letting people sit in my chair. I could have adjusted.
He wouldn't let me sit in there.
Yeah.
He told me, get up.
Harry, that's my chair. I bought that. I pay for that. It's in my place on my podcast.
Testing.
When you come to the basement to load.
Give me more energy, please.
Testing. 1, 2, 3.
There you go.
Testing.
You have a great voice. Don't.
My name is right now. It's probably half.
All right.
I'm getting old.
Jason?
What are you going
to
do?
What?
All right. You sound good.
Yes. I sound good.
Those are nice, too.
I know. Those two backpacks, cell phone cases.
Your company makes all that stuff?
Yeah. All swag, cell phone cases. What is it else? We don't do buttons. We do yoga pants, so we could get some Dear Leader Face yoga pants. Yep.
Okay.
I would. Yeah, I'll buy those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
See? Yeah. We also like do the things for like Adidas and Nike. So like if Chris wanted to, like if he ready to do like a Weird Libertarian special edition, like Adidas sweat wicking jerseys, we could do those.
What would we need jerseys for?
Really just the sweat wicking. So next time you're like New Orleans or somewhere hot, it's like hot when you're like a sweat
Austin,
wicking.
Austin 2020 t-shirts.
Yeah. See? Yeah.
It was definitely sweat wicking. It was actually hotter here. Excuse me. It was hotter here than it was in New Orleans, that's for sure.
Oh, wow.
It was humider there, though.
See, I never really left.
The air conditioning?
Mm. That's the way to live in the South.
Well, then those days where the power goes out in your B&B and you have no air conditioning. Those are fun times.
When that air conditioning kicked on that night, it was the greatest moment of my life. It was...
I was just looking up if I could get into the hotel... But one night, just because it was like the last night, I was like, I just want to sleep. And all of a sudden, the power, I was looking up the number and I was getting ready to dial it. And the air conditioning kicked on. I was like, all right, I'm going to sleep now.
Was this at the convention?
Yeah, during the convention. I got a B&B in the sixth district. And I think Chris and was sharing one with someone in that area. Because our power went out at the same time.
It's
just anytime there's any rain, power went out.
Mm.
It's not the best neighborhood that we were in.
Doesn't sound like it.
I think 12th and E Street.
I've only been to New Orleans once, and it was, well, probably 13, 14 years ago. So,
yeah, I grew up on Jefferson Avenue.
Oh, did you?
I didn't grow up. I mean, I spent a lot of time in Jefferson Avenue, 600 block, where... A third of the homes are abandoned, and they all have boards on the windows.
Is that Fallen Katrina?
No, I was talking. It's Indy.
Okay.
We're there for a few weeks. We walked outside, and there's a drug dealer selling on our porch, right in front of our house. And I'm like, "Yeah, you need to go." And they're like, "They don't want to go." So we came back out with guns, and they decided to leave. There's no joke. You have to, when you move into those places like that, you have to take a shotgun, go down to the end of the street, the stop sign, blow it up, walk back to your house, make sure everybody sees you. Nobody will mess with you again. Show them you're crazy.
Yeah, that works too. There was a couple of times I saw these kids. Like I said, they're kids. Because we have this basketball court in the neighborhood, and some of the kids like to come down and walk through the neighborhood to get to the basketball court. I don't care. I don't even don't care that because they're kids if they go through my backyard.
Right.
Do not care. I care if they drop garbage and do stuff like that, and I ask them not to and do like that. Because if they did, I'll just buy thorn bushes and stuff like that. I don't care. I'll line my thing with poison ivy. You know, it doesn't affect me. I could touch it. I can almost make a tea out of it. But a couple of the kids were sitting on the corner afterwards and wanted to, like, they're hanging out and just looked like they were shooting dice, right? I thought it was hilarious that they, you know, these, you know, kids were sitting there shooting dice. So I put them on Snapchat. And they had an issue with that. It was hilarious. They wanted to get in my face and be mad at me. And, you know, I really thought they were trying to put hands on me. But the thing is, I thought it was funny. And I was laughing because I knew they were unarmed. And I was armed because they had basketball shorts on. So I know they didn't have a gun. But I had pants on. And I knew I had mine in my pocket. So it was easy for me to be polite. Hey, can you just keep going? Mm-hmm. It's okay. It's a joke. Laugh. Ha, ha, ha. Bah, 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 bah. I got you on Snapchat. It's funny. My friends are laughing at you. Fun times. Indianapolis is a fun city. It's got these weird pockets where it goes from really bad neighborhoods to really nice. And then, which is weird, is the like Mass Ave regentrification and the Irving regentrification, which is kind of weird to be on Mass Ave and 10th Street and like, oh, blue Indy car. Microbrewery. Drug dealer. You know, boarded up house. It's like, this is weird.
Yeah, we were in a house on 10th or 12th and Arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
There was a house there on the corner. It was a big two-story house. That was, actually, three-story. It was an attic in it, too. The place was beautiful. You could tell it used to be at one point.
Mm-hmm.
So a friend of mine bought it for a few $1,000s. There was... Somebody had tried taking out.
There we go.
Mark that up. Yeah. Okay. Somebody had tried taking out all the lath and plather that was in there and put up drywall. They only got halfway done, so they got all the stuff out.
Yeah.
So your 2x4 house, it's mm-hmm. 3 stories high. The wind would blow, that thing would
just
do this.
Sway.
And what happened was they got in and found out that the foundation was starting to crack a little bit, so there was some. Mm. They needed to jack the house up a little bit and fix it. And they didn't want to go through that process, so they ended up selling it. This. I went in there, I changed out the old fuse box
mm-hmm.
with a breaker box without turning off the main power to the house.
Nice.
Don't do that. Nobody ever do that. I got cut off. Can you hear me still?
Yeah.
I lost myself in the.
Yeah, I couldn't hear him either.
Yeah, I lost myself.
So now he cranks it up super high.
Check one, two.
I can hear you.
You can't hear you?
Not right now. It just cut out for some reason.
So you can hear me,
yeah,
but you can't hear you.
I can hear you a little bit now. No, I'm not hearing you a lot.
Check one, two. Check one, two.
There we go.
Sorry, Harry. Check one, two. Check one, two. Check. How about now?
I can hear me now, too. I can hear both. It's very loud. Sorry, and I like it.
All right.
It was a bit of a jump there.
Hey, is this yours?
Yeah, we can kind of move this
over. I know,
over.
It went all one way.
Yeah. Yeah,
now I'm getting a buzz.
Here, jiggle those cords for me. Here.
Okay, jiggle to
jiggle
the left.
Jiggle those cords, please.
Jiggle to the left.
Jiggle to the left.
Jiggle.
Yeah.
But no, it was a good time. We finally, years later, somebody bought the house and actually fixed it up nice.
Nice.
Because they're regentrifying that area.
Mm-hmm.
So they probably bought it for a big selling price and went in and did a good work on it. So.
Because I remember
it
like
was sketchy
going through like getting on Mass Ave and going through up there from leaving downtown from going on IEPY like 03. And now when you pass like old Coca-Cola bottling company, it's like, wow, there's stuff here now. This used to be just warehouses and nothing. And you just drive by it doing like 50 because there was nothing over here. Now there's crosswalks, people sitting there. And it's like, wow, the neighborhood just looks nice now.
Mm-hmm.
Crap.
We were right in the middle of it, but the time
we
were there.
I should have bought one of these cheap houses.
When we were there, we would go to the store down the street and drive back, and then somebody would follow us home and drive by and start showing their guns, and we'd have to come out and stop. It's like crazy.
Yeah.
So we're alive now?
Yep. Well, we're about ready. We're going to let Jason text his wife.
Yeah, send that to my wife.
He doesn't want to get in trouble. We don't want him to get
tell
in trouble.
Mine too, because if I don't, she'll get bad.
But yes, he would have.
Asleep,
you think that'll? I haven't hooked a live cam up yet. I haven't played with that computer yet. But
I like it. I like it. We got to find some time so I can come over and go do that.
Sounds good. I'm off all next week.
Off? You're off? Why don't you tell me sooner? I could have took a day.
Well,
I don't know. I'll fake sick on like a Thursday or something. Yeah. So sick. Because like the sales department is supposed if the sales department doesn't move next week. Then I definitely can just take a day.
Okay.
But if they end up moving, I'll need to be with them because they are some of the biggest whining babies when it comes to this. Oh crap! They're watching. All right, of moving. Okay, but they're the sales department. They bring the cash in. They
check.
They find other people. So it's kind of like, I'll give you what you want as long as you keep selling. Just like one of our person who does like a huge, one of our massive clients. It's like, you know, the director of the finance, my chief technical officer is like, hey, can you just spend time with her? So they basically blotted out when she moves, I have to spend 4 hours with her.
Yeah.
So basically half my day.
Gross.
To make sure her move is just like pain-free.
Seamless.
Yeah, seamless. Totally seamless and pain-free. But she has so much to move. She, you know, has a second. She has one 250 gig drive that's almost completely full on her computer. She has another 500 gig drive in there that's not. She just started to. She's almost halfway filled, and because she refuses to use any of the servers, the cloud drive, anything, she's got a terabyte of OneDrive space, and she won't use it. It's okay. I've got a new terabyte drive for her. We're gonna copy all that. Put that all. And get her moving to her new, because she's actually been doing very, very good, because she uses an old OptiPlex 755, which is Core 2 Duo DDR2. She has 6 gigs of DDR2 RAM, which I am shocked that she's able to work on that machine.
Yeah.
Okay. The noise is gone. You were making noise over there.
Was I?
Yeah, it was the mic. All right, you guys ready?
So he's just saying you were talking.
No.
Yeah. The noise. We were talking about computers. And, yeah. When I walked in there, when I saw it. No. Go ahead. Start the
okay.
show.
Yeah. All right.
Go ahead. Yeah, start your show. Okay. So your show's so important to you.
Let's put on a show.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. We bring you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves while putting people before political parties. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective with the goal of leaving you better informed. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, and subscribe on Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. In exchange for supporting our program, we give you all kinds of bonus content and free stuff. 10 minutes of the show that you didn't hear if you weren't a bonus subscriber. And we're working on some new projects as we speak. A new membership manager. I haven't even told you this yet. I'll tell you off air, but that's okay. A tease. So all kinds of cool stuff. If you're a Patreon member, sign up at WeAreLibertarians.com. This show is crowdsourced, so you can send us news in our Facebook group or our Discord channel, and we're always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@WeAreLibertarians.com. Please be warned that this show is raw, unedited, and authentic, so the language is sometimes strong and offensive. Joining me tonight is Harry Price. Harry, how are you?
Going good. How are you?
What was that?
What?
There's just noise everywhere. There's something off in the equipment tonight. It's not anyone here. It's not you.
I'm new.
So. Yeah, you're new. But I don't know. There's just something with the equipment. It's odd. Like there's a buzz and then there's noises and it's throwing me off a little bit.
Well, at my job, like we're doing this move and I'm having a gremlin just been following me around the whole building today.
All right.
Actually, this whole week, actually.
So I can blame you.
Yeah. Because like I had a monitor that didn't want to work at one workstation. I switched it out with another monitor, still didn't want to work. Switched the computer out, didn't want to work. Switched the cables out, didn't want to work. I leave, go to lunch, come back. Everything works. I put that monitor on my desk, and it started working again. I have no idea what just happened there.
Maybe it was Reinhold, who is also here with us. Happy birthday, Reinhold.
Thank you very much.
You have been quite controversial, but we'll get to that in just a moment. Our other guest host tonight is Jason Doolittle. Jason,
Hello.
How are you?
Very well.
Jason, one of our $100 a month subscribers, and when you are at that tier, you get to come on the show, and you actually came from Texas.
I did.
To join us. You're going to be here all weekend. We're going to hang out tomorrow night and then go shoot guns on Saturday.
Yep, wouldn't have it any other way.
Yep, so right. I've never fired a gun, so we're going to talk a little gun safety tonight. They're going to give me a crash course about how to handle weapons on Saturday. I think mostly so they don't get shot. I think it's more for them than for me.
Well, personally, I just don't want the range officer to kick me, ban me, right. you, all of us from there. Because right, I like right. this gun range. It's just one of my favorites.
Right. Don't want anybody looking at us funny.
Yeah.
What do you want to say where we're going?
We're going to Indy Arms on the east side off of Keystone.
Okay.
They're by the Bacon post office.
Okay.
That's why I like going there because it's where I got my passport from. This is the Bacon post office.
Which password?
No, passport.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I heard password.
Too. I heard password. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You've been playing with all your tech, your little tech things all day, haven't you?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Now, it is an honor to have you in the studio.
It's an honor to be here.
Jason, I'm going to brag on Jason. He has been one of the most important people to We Are Libertarians and to myself over the last few years. The Mevo camera that you watch the videos on, Jason donated that. He was the first person to step up and become a $100 a month subscriber when we started offering the Patreon. Your financial support to the program has been incredibly important to everyone involved in We Are Libertarians, but especially me, and I want to thank you for it. So,
like I said, We Are Libertarians has been a big part of my life, and I wish I could do more.
Do you have your checkbook? No, I'm just kidding.
It's all digital now. I can send you something on PayPal.
No, it's quite an honor to have you here, and it's especially humbling that you took time off work and you flew just specifically to see little old us, Harry.
Yes, wow. Well, thank you.
You guys are my heroes. What can I say?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I get very Midwestern and uptight when people start talking about that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I save many lives on a daily basis, but as a podcaster, you have to be humble. So I really appreciate you coming, and I hope that we don't disappoint you.
No, I don't know how you could.
Oh, give us time. We'll find
out. Oh, yeah. We've got 2 hours.
If you're anything like my mother, if you're anything like my mother, we'll find a way.
Just give me a few minutes. I'm sure I could do something.
Yes, me. Speaking of disappointments, Reinhold, what have all of a sudden in the group, for whatever reason, there's like three people that hate you. We have a Facebook group that you can join at WeAreLibertarians.com.
Yeah. And can I get the background? Because I don't follow anything on Facebook anymore. So can I hear the story of what's going on?
Well, the best that I can take away from what's going on is that I am an open borders libertarian, which is the libertarianism that
the worst thing you could be.
No, it's what it is. So, but to some people, it is the worst thing you could be because they are closed borders or bordertarians, as we call them, which is really a kind of a minor branch of libertarianism that they have somehow created this concept that that private property rights suddenly allow you to do things like close borders and tell other people that they can't be on your property, but they can, it's kind of a weird way to think about it.
Some would call that mental gymnastics.
Yeah.
Right.
Cognitive dissonance or something.
Because, listen, if you want to be a libertarian but believe in closed borders, then that's your right. But you have to understand that if you close the borders, like we have pretty stringent border protections already. You know, when people say the borders are just porous and wide open, that's not true at all. No. But when you what you saw with the border guard basically like stopping people at the border and people piling up on bridges and all the stuff that we talked about a few episodes ago, that's what closed borders look like, but much more militaristic and much more robust, let's say, with more border guards, more police officers, more prisons.
Mm-hmm. More violation of rights.
More violation of rights. And so you really are arguing for an increase in the state.
Yeah.
Now, if you believe that this is an essential part of having a functioning country, that's fine. But you have to understand you're arguing for more government if you're for closed borders.
Mm-hmm. And you're not arguing the long-term libertarian view. I mean, this is kind of a newer thing that came out of Lou Rockwell and Ron Paul,
right?
Kind of making that seem like that should be the case, but it's not the way it's always been. That's not libertarianism.
You watch Lou Rockwell's speech on Mises TV on YouTube, And he's basically, his argument that we should have, that we should rethink open borders as a libertarian position, essentially came down to the fact that it may be a violation of the non-aggression principle if people have to live next to cultures and ethnicities that they may not want to. Mm-hmm. Now, Harry, being the minority in the room, how would you take that? Like, he said this out loud, and I'm like, bro, this is what they're talking about all the time. Like,
yeah, I can't even... Sorry. It's hilarious. So, you don't want to live next to someone. Then fine, then. Own the property right... Oh, sorry. Private property rights again. The thing that you were abiding for. If I own that, then I can do what I want with it. Have who I want right there. I'm not doing anything to you. Also, you do not get, you know, the price controls of, you know, what I, you know, what I choose to do to my property.
Yeah.
And that's all, like, the whole immigration thing, like, well, they're coming in and they're bringing labor down, like, so you, that's just price controls with a different name on it.
Protectionism, yeah.
Yeah, it's protectionism.
And the and you're going to have to jump in whenever you want to say something. Just interrupt. That's how we do things here on We're Libertarians, you know. It's bothering me, just for showmanship for the cameras. Would you mind turning that hall light off and closing the curtain, please? I don't want people to know that this is an apartment and that's my kitchen back there.
You're right, yeah.
Harry, get the light.
Don't you know, mix the illusion.
Yes, exactly right. So, how glorious is the studio?
It's glorious. The studio is awesome.
Right.
I love it.
I like this guy. We need to have him on every episode.
That's fantastic.
The outside staff is really great.
I was greeted pleasantly.
By Mittens. Yeah, and they always jump to, well, listen, why don't you just let people into your front door? I mean, if you're an open borders person, then just let everybody come through your front door and they can sleep in your house.
And that same argument can be used to justify taxation, all kinds of violations of individual rights that libertarians are supposed to be against.
In what ways?
Well, I mean, if the public property is community owned,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're talking, isn't that kind of socialism, kind of communism, that the community owns it, so we all get to say on what we're going to do with it? Can't they also say the same thing about, well, you know, you're making more than this other person. We all got together and agreed that we should be the same. So let's do that as common property. I mean, you can start making those points.
Yeah.
By using that argument.
Mm-hmm.
What fascinates me is that in our Facebook group and in our Discord, Reinhold's in there a lot and is talking to people, and he makes very orthodox libertarian arguments that I've read the 10 years that I've been in the movement, and there's a new breed of libertarians popping up who are Trump-leaning, who just see orthodox libertarianism as leftism. It's very perplexing to me.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. The whole thing leading up to the convention was that the Libertarian Party had swerved left. I'm like, if anything, it's gone right. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at what the platform was in 1988, 1992, 1996, and you can take from that it was more right than it is now, mm-hmm. you're not reading it very well.
Somebody on our Facebook page commented, you know, it's great to hear Abdul on We Are Libertarians because we stream that to the big page. Mm-hmm. And they said, it's great to hear Abdul on We Are Libertarians because he's arguing that taxation isn't theft and that there should be some level of social services. And we don't have many Hayekian libertarians left. Everybody's gone Rothbardian.
Yeah.
And that property, and I'm not disputing this, but that property rights are the foundation of a free society. And that, and when you really examine the thought and the multi-strains of libertarianism, Rothbardianism, the Mises Institute, Ron Paul have really won and are the most identifiable as the version of libertarianism as most people, when they come into the philosophy, now think of it. I mean, those Ron Paul campaigns in 08 and 12 really kind of cemented that wing of the libertarian movement as kind of the new orthodoxy. And most people don't get that, you know, just what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. And the fact, too, is that that message they think that message is going to reach everybody because it reached them, not understanding that message is really going to reach all the INTJs who are like 10% of the population.
Right.
Right.
So 80% of libertarians are INTJ. Only 10% of the population is, because that message resonates immediately. So you can do this.
Mm-hmm.
They are on board immediately. Come on board. But what do you do with the other 90% of the people who need different messaging to get them to start thinking that way. You know, if you focus on, well, this worked for me, we should do it for everybody, this is the only single message we should be putting out there, you're going to fail.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because a lot of them, for some reason, don't even care about growing the party.
No.
A lot of them do. But they claim that they are. I also feel that it's just to be what you said, because you hear that a lot, like, oh, you're just left. Especially for me in my political position, it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm so far to the right. You are all communist to me. Okay? And that's why it's always weird to watch them in the group and say that. And they're loud, they're vocal, but it's the same way. But to me, I look at them that it's just a very weird understanding of libertarian philosophy. Just like when you watch the I get frustrated with watching Steven Crowder. I like his comedy. I get him. He's funny to me. But what I dislike about him is that he calls himself a libertarian. I'm a conservative libertarian. I'm like, those are weird juxtaposition with that.
Like, I'm an elephant rhino.
So right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, let's talk about, like, you are a conservative. I will give you that label, but your libertarianism, you can be libertarian leaning, but dude, like, I've seen your positions on, like, borders and everything and the state and the government. You like it. You want to be establishment.
Yeah. What I think has popped up is that people who are anti-left or people who are anti-right, or people who are generally anti-power, consider themselves libertarianism.
Mm-hmm,
libertarians.
Yes. Right.
And this goes on in the conservative movement and the left movement as well, the leftist movement. But you look at the conservative movement, there was a National Review writer who tweeted out that basically Turning Point USA is just a sham for people to own the libs and make money for themselves. Basically to make money for themselves and get rich by quote-unquote owning the libs. And, you know, the political discourse around, there's like an actual term that she said around memes being the like memes are the message.
Mm-hmm.
But it really has come down to this group of young conservatives who mm-hmm. consider the style to be the substance. Like Tommy Lauren, no one is arguing that Tommy Lauren is an intellectual. It's completely it's completely style.
Mm-hmm.
And she lacks substance. And I see that starting to creep into the libertarian movement, where it's about, let's be brash, let's be, you know, anti-left, let's be anti-right, let's be let's own the libs and the cons, let's all be all style, and then say nice things about Mary Rothbard. And it's just like, you got to have more than that. Like, there has to be some wrestling with these big questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm 10 years into this, and I'm still constantly learning new things about the philosophy, because the philosophy of libertarianism is constant. It doesn't change. You know, my understanding of it increases. It changes. You know, that is the guide star. I'm not trying to adjust libertarianism to fit what I believe. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to discover new aspects of this philosophy. You know, and I think that's a real problem that I see starting to creep into the libertarian movement, is that people are trying to adopt the word to fit what they believe, and what they believe is just punishing the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's not an actual thing.
No.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say I agree. A lot of people, it's a little bit like if you start with an answer and then you look for, and then you try to fit your question,
right.
Like, you know, we get into that with
journalists.
Well, yes, and that was what was coming to mind. I was thinking more like from a scientific perspective. If you already know what answer you want to come up with, mm-hmm. then you can make your argument to fit that answer. And
right.
That's where I think we're seeing that with a lot of these newer libertarians, especially in the age of Trump.
Yeah.
Somebody today was quibbling over me posting a Business Insider article. And I'm like, well, I posted the Business Insider article because it had a better headline, and that's all you're going to read anyways. You know? Like, so don't argue with the source, because you're not going to go check the source material anyways.
I think that's what caused a lot of the issue, too, is I posted something from Now This.
Right.
Video.
Yeah.
Right.
And they're like, oh, I can't believe you're posting from here. I'm like, what they're saying is not infactual. You might be able to learn something. It was actually just a replay of a portion of a propaganda video that was made in the 40s during the war. And it was some guy standing there going, we should hate those, the aliens and the Negro and all this, and then And everybody's kind of like, yeah, yeah, I can agree with that. Then he said the Masons. And the
guy
goes,
be careful with the N-word.
And then
we have company over. Jason, I'm sorry. I didn't mean for you to be offended by the word Negro.
Just tear my heart out.
But Papa John's go down, now rivals.
But then the kicker was, then he said something about, I'm the Masons. And then the guy goes, wait a minute, I'm a Mason. And the guy standing next to him said, yeah, it's different when they actually are focusing that hate on you, isn't it? But when it's on somebody else, you're on board and you're ready to go. And it was a great, I think, a great example of what's happening is that everybody's like, they're the problem and they're the problem. We got to get these people. And it's group thought. And you're supposed to be libertarian, which is individualism. You're never supposed to assume that anybody thinks or is going to act a certain way based off any group identity.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so you take them at the individual, but then you go, well, the immigrants and these people and those people, and those are the problem. But when it hits you, you're going to be the first one to squawk about it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you need to start. Nobody's willing to put themselves in other people's shoes. Have empathy for other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We cut you off. Go ahead, Harry.
Oh, you're fine. But this phenomenon of them doing it, I don't think it's a new thing. I think they've always been there.
It's getting more vocal.
Yeah, they're more vocal, but it's always happened is the Republicans who don't want to be Republicans in the midterms or around that time or around there's not an election season around there, they want to call themselves libertarians. They don't want to be a Republican in front of their friends. They're, oh, no, I'm a libertarian.
Yeah. You know,
but in hard hearts, they'll vote R every time. They'll vote R blindly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one of the guys who was yelling at me says, I'm going to vote for the Republican next time unless there's a really good candidate that, you know, gets put up. But otherwise, I'm voting Republican because I just want to give it to the Dems. I'm like, well, you're just an anti-Dem person. You're not following a philosophy here.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like Crowder, Shapiro, a lot of them will give like credence to libertarian thinkers and philosophers and people in the libertarian movement. But come in election season, they can't get on the show. They can't talk to them. They won't bring them up. They won't even say the word. They won't say the term. It's all about Republicans. These are the candidates we have. Like, oh, these candidates are laughable. Ha, 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 ha. And they'll make a joke about the Libertarian Party, and they go right back. But as soon as the election's over, no, let's talk about libertarian philosophy again. You know, like, okay, so you're a convenient libertarian. I used to, luckily this week, I used to keep Jason Stapleton actually in the exact same category as one of those libertarian convenient people. Like, I'm a convenient libertarian. But still, he's kind of putting his money where his mouth is now.
Yeah.
Well, it's $25. It's not like a lot of money.
It's something he signed up.
I know, but it's amazing. I think it's amazing these guys are signing up. I know that there's certain people taking credit for it that I don't know. I mean, it's great that it's happening.
Yes.
So let's all get on board and join and go forward.
Did he join the party? Is that what?
For those who haven't heard, Tom Woods came and spoke at the National Libertarian
Convention. Yeah, I heard he joined the party.
Yes. And so he came and spoke, and the Mises Caucus had a really good showing at this convention. And Michael Heiss has done a good job of getting this wing of Misesian libertarians to come to the Libertarian Party and make the choice, you know, like our buddy Daryl, for instance, and Michael that we talked to at the convention in the last few episodes, basically saying, yeah, I want to be a part of it. And like I said at Porkfest, like, why, if you didn't like Gary Johnson, then why wouldn't you show up and participate in the selection of the next presidential candidate? Because at the end of the day, the next Libertarian Party presidential nominee is going to be the most high-profile libertarian that many of your friends will ever hear. They will never hear me. They will probably never hear Ron Paul at this point. They will hear the next libertarian candidate because people get interested in politics during elections. They don't get involved in, you know, midterms or 2019
states.
When there is nothing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, someone said, why isn't Tom Woods running for chair? And Nick snarkily said, because he's not a member. And then Tom Woods said, I just joined. Thanks for the offer. And then Dave Smith did a podcast about it and said that he joined of part of the problem. And then, you know, our buddy Mark Clare was at the convention as a delegate. He's always been, you know, our friend Johnny Rocket, he was anti-LP, and then he joined. Now he's, like, involved in his state party. Then Mark Clare, he's the next domino that fell, and then he became a delegate. Then Tom Woods, then Dave Smith.
We're coming for you, Roger.
And Roger Paxton was the vice chair of his party until, like, 3 months ago. Yeah. And then Jason Stapleton had Mark Clare on, and then Mark Clare basically said, like, why are you bitching about a party when you're not willing to get involved? And so he joined the party. And it is funny because, you know, I'm somebody who I've never left the party. I mean, I've had strong criticisms over the last year or so about the party, but I was on my state committee until April. Because I'm a firm believer that if you want to be involved in electoral politics as a libertarian, the Libertarian Party, while very frustrating, is probably just as worth your time as being in the Republican Party, because you're actually going to be on the ballot in November. Most Republican libertarians get primaried out and aren't even a relevant factor through the summer and the fall.
And what I like about the Libertarian Party is that if you're interested in getting out of your little echo chambers and actually dealing with other libertarians that are maybe thinking a little bit different than you, the party is a great place to do it.
The party, and I found this to be true from many of these people that we were talking about earlier, they actually went to the convention and couldn't believe that they got along with libertarian socialists, that they had conversations with people like Arvin. I mean, you were one of those people who were like, you know, you said before we started, Arvin might be right.
Well,
about not about some things, about the messaging part at least.
And that was the thing that always got me when I was having discussions about this 8 months ago when the Mises Caucus got started. I was like, their belief was we don't feel welcome in the party. And it's like, that's the furthest thing from the truth. We want you in the party. We're going to fight with you and argue with you because we're libertarians.
It's called politics. Yes.
And we want to grow and we want to have those discussions. And maybe you're right about this and maybe I'm right about that. And maybe we can get together and come to some new understanding and join forces to fight against the state. It was never about trying to keep people out.
Right.
So when you hear – that was the whole big knock is that there was a concern that there was – going to be some people getting in and then pushing out other people and having purges, and we're going to make the party great, you know, what it should be. And it's like, the party is what it should be. It's everybody talking to each other. It's everybody getting along, but still having discussions, still having disagreements.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like this happens in the other two parties a lot as well. You know, I mean,
well, it's not going on big right now.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. So I guess I don't understand why people would feel like they are not welcome.
Well, the difference between the Republicans and the Democrats is they don't really have a unifying philosophy. They're more just, we don't want those guys in charge, so we're going to agree on these sets of principles.
Well, it shifted over the last decade because the Democrats have always been kind of a coalition party where you had a collection of these you know, intersectional groups coming together to work, and labor unions and, you know, identity politics groups and public sector workers, and they all kind of worked under the same banner for the Democratic Party. And now that has become, in many ways, more like the Republican Party, which used to be top-down ideological, we're social conservatives, everybody fall in line. And the Republican Party has become more of a coalitional party because they've had to adapt over the last couple cycles, because now you've got the Trump people who are kind of alt-righty. You've got more libertarians in the younger crowd. You've got social conservatives still, so you have more of a coalition party, and the Libertarian Party is very much 17 different strains of libertarianism coming together to work within the Libertarian Party. So you have more of it is about an ideology, but it is those coalition groups based around that ideology, and it is like. You ask, like, why does the infighting seem bigger in the Libertarian Party? It's because people are more dramatic and people are kind of pussies, to be quite honest. And it's because people don't understand, like, I if you listen to Matt Canell's interview, how do I say it right now?
Canell.
On his interview where he talked about, you know, I intentionally tweaked Joshua Smith. Because I wanted Joshua Smith to show who Joshua Smith was. If he doesn't like it, I'm sorry, then don't get involved in politics. And I thought that was very shrewd political maneuvering on his part, and basically saying, yeah, there should be some conflict, because politics inherently is conflict. So, yeah, we're going to have to replace your mic, because you have a lot of snow in that mic. So, Reinhold, if you wouldn't mind, there's a basket down there. Grab him a mic, please. So, you have... In the Libertarian Party, a lot of people who are totally inexperienced at politics, and so as a result, they generally don't understand the rough and tumble nature of politics.
Well, I agree with – I mean, I completely agree that most libertarians are not particularly skilled political actors, but I wonder if also it has a lot to do with – because we're talking about a group of people who have adopted a philosophy that – I think they take it very personally a lot of times as well. Yeah. You know, like it's very near and dear to their heart. It's not just a, it's not just politics. It's also like the way they live. And so I wonder if they feel attacked sometimes when they're being, when their beliefs are being questioned.
I totally agree with that. I think, and you know, Reinhold, you may agree with this as well. Mm-hmm. Libertarians, their whole ideology is libertarian. Like their whole identity is libertarianism. Right, right. Like, and I went through this when I worked for the Libertarian Party. I had a really rough transitional year in 2013 after leaving working for the party because that had been my identity for 4 years. I was the libertarian guy, and I didn't want to do that anymore. I wanted to do something different. And it was very difficult for me because my whole identity was wrapped up in being a libertarian. And so when people attacked the ideology or the party or Ron Paul, it's like they're attacking me and I've got to fight back. And now that I've diversified my portfolio, I have more friends. I have more interests. I have – this is just one of my interests. This is one of the things that I'm passionate about. It's not all of me. I'm much – I laugh at some and most things now as instead of getting – ticked off.
And there's a thought process too where you don't want to have your you've come to this belief in your philosophy and you're stuck there and you're not pushing it or expanding it or questioning it and trying to grow off of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you stay in a little echo chamber and your little friends and this is what you identify with instead of purposely going out and questioning what you're saying, talking to other people, pushing those views.
Right.
And that's something I've always done where it was kind of a debate technique back in, you know, high school, college, where you would take the counterpoint to your own views and try to destroy them. Because if you can destroy them, then somebody else is going to be able to.
Yeah.
So you're never going to be able to go out and debate anybody if you can't even defend your own ideas from yourself.
Yeah. And what chance do you have of debating somebody that, because if you can't convince someone that agrees with you about 85 to 90% of your message, you have no chance of anyone outside the party.
Yeah.
How are you going to reach that center? How are you going to reach people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think part of the problem too is that since we agree on 90%, it's that 10% that everybody just gets so.
See, yeah, I think we say that a lot. I think we say that a lot, but I don't necessarily agree because I think that you know when if it's not. Sure, there's a lot that I disagree with on ideology and end game with Matt Keneal.
Keno.
Sorry. Matt Keno, the libertarian socialist. But in that interview, he was very articulate and well-spoken and convincing. But when you watch the debate, he wasn't, it's because of his tactics.
Right. He's trying to push... He's trying to push buttons.
Right.
And his messaging then gets confused and conflated. And people assume that when he's saying that property is theft and rent is theft, then he's trying to implement full-blown, cross-the-board socialism. That's like – or communism. And he says that, no, I just want to be a free, voluntary society inside of our little area, however big he can make it be, but that we all agree to it. It's never going to be forced on anybody. But people don't hear that because when they hear rent is theft, they have their own idea of what that means in their head because they've talked to other people who have said it. So he's, I think, making a mistake using those terms.
Sure.
And explaining it that way.
That's why the taxation is theft thing is not necessarily. Taxation is theft.
Exactly.
Is a funny meme. It's a funny punchline, but it's not necessarily going to convince anyone that isn't libertarian. Yeah. It's become like a litmus test.
Yeah. And the Fed, too.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of the Mises caucus, they want to say taxation is theft and the Fed. And anti-war, and it's like those are great ideas, but you can't. That can't be it. That can't be what you're selling. There's other things going on.
Well, that's the problem with a lot of what Arvin said in the Arvin Vora interview in the LP recap 2 episodes ago. You know, it isn't what he was saying. I don't disagree with any of the components that he's necessarily putting forth in that interview that he talked about.
Yeah.
But I do kind of find it to be cover a little bit of an excuse when he says, you know, I'm going around. But I certainly believe that as he travels the country to LP state convention, he's finding some people who are not pure.
It's not the majority, though.
But it's probably not the majority.
Yeah.
And so he's kind of saying, I'm doing this because I'm provoking to get a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't know. I just didn't totally buy what he was talking
about.
He
also made sure that he pointed out that part of what he was doing was to get people to know who he was,
right,
and what his name was. Mm-hmm. So I think that worked. Was part.
Yeah, it worked.
Well, it worked. But I think so. I've kind of run into this theory lately that some of what he is saying is right, because you do have to kind of push your push the boundaries a little bit to get reactions. And if people are talking about you, then you're getting through somehow to somebody somewhere. And I'm seeing that play out on the Facebook group just recently, right? So I'm like, huh, this seems to be kind of working. But I don't want to
give us some examples.
Well, just I think I called somebody the other day sociopath.
Were they a sociopath, or were you being mean?
Well, I can't make a medical diagnosis if they're a sociopath or not. But if you don't have empathy for your fellow, what really got me was when someone was making the point, you know, I put out the, was it Lewandowski that did that, where he did the womp womp thing?
Yes.
So I pointed that out, and somebody said, good, that's right. That's the right reaction to it. And I'm like, you don't even have an emotional state enough to admit that that's over the line for what the story was about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. And they're like, no, screw those people. And it's like, and so he gets upset because I called him a sociopath. But if all you're showing me through weeks and weeks and weeks of talking is that you don't care about these people or certain groups of people, only yourself, that's really textbook sociopath, right? Mm-hmm. So if you don't want to be thought of that way, you might want to watch what you're saying all the time, because I know that there's a group of people who are trying to fight against being, you know, appeals to emotion,
right,
is what they're calling it. It's like, well, you're just trying to make me feel bad for these people. So I'm like, well, yeah, you should feel bad when somebody's rights are being violated. That's libertarianism. Mm-hmm. You don't want people's rights being violated. When you hear the stories of what they have to go through from the government forcing them to be, you know, to follow the rules that they put out, then you should feel bad for these people. That's not an appeal to emotion. That's a full breadth of the understanding of the situation.
Correct. Yeah. They're ignoring data. Ignoring emotion is just ignoring data that your body, your brain takes in.
Right.
Everyone talks about like that gut feeling about this. Well, this is your emotions, your experience telling you what, you know, trying to make a very, very quick decision.
Yeah.
That's why, like, hey, I should trust my gut. It's like, yeah, because it's your body making a quick decision.
And most of the time it's right. But you should always temper it, but you shouldn't just discount it.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
But
good, I mean, Jason.
Well, I was going to say that I think that some of the people will recoil from these emotional arguments because of the whole feeling like you have to step in, which then means it has to be the government that steps in. I think that's where a lot of people.
I actually got accused of that.
Yeah.
When I said that, you know, well, we should find out what's going on with these kids. We should have courts, and then we should maybe bring in some psychologists to figure out, you know, what's best for the kid. And if the kid is, if that's really their parent, maybe we could find out how they react, and psychologists can tell when they're lying, all sort of stuff. And the reaction was, oh, you just want the government to come in and put all these people in there to do this. I'm like, there are so many organizations out there that are doing for free. They're just wanting to help, and they're taking donations, and we could have those people going in and doing this.
Somehow common sense, like, that. Listen, we have the state, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the government is not going away tomorrow.
Right.
And so we're not going to probably even pass the law that is going to take care of hold on, Harry's putting on a fuzzy thing on his mic. You're not going to end ICE tomorrow, okay? It's probably going to be a six-month process, all right?
At best.
So would you not want psychologists? It was always my argument with gay marriage. Mm-hmm. Should the state be involved in marriage at all? No. But if they're going to be, then everybody should be treated equally under the law.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
That's always been – I've always thought that was a libertarian view because – you know, everybody should be treated fairly under the law. That's a right you have. And I can say that, okay, we shouldn't have this, we shouldn't have that, we shouldn't have taxation. But if you're going to tax people, you got to do it evenly and fairly. You can't
and pick people out. As low as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, you can hold two arguments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think sometimes people feel that it's not as clean and as elegant and as simplistic as, you know, just the complete anarchist position, which is no government at all. That's very clean and easy. But the reality of the situation in front of us is that there's going to be taxes over the next, let's say, 20 years.
And that's where every candidate gets in trouble.
Right.
Yeah, it's where every candidate gets in trouble. And I think that's where a lot of people are having problems with Gary Johnson.
Yeah.
Was he didn't articulate this well enough. It's like, you should have a plan to get from where you're at now to where you want to be. And you can say, okay, for my first 4 years, let's get to here. Mm-hmm. And here's how we're going to do it. And here's what we're going to take care of first. And we're going to pare this down. And this is how this is going to work. You have to have thought of that, at least. You have to have some sense in your head of where you're going to get there. Because if people just say, oh, I'm just going to go in there, I'm going to end everything,
the voter's going
to sit there and go, that's going to be so much chaos at once if you don't have a plan. And what am I going to do to take care of my kids? Mm-hmm. What's going to happen to my job? Am I going to be homeless? Because I've only got, if I miss two paychecks, I don't have an apartment anymore. They're going to kick me out. You can't tell that to people and give them any comfort to flip the switch for you. So that's the problem with a lot of the candidates.
Jason? Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's on a lower, well, maybe not so much a smaller scale, but I mean, with Brexit, they're having, look at what's happening with that. The plans are, I mean, it's a 10-year process just to, for them to leave the European Union. And even that's, they've changed the amount of, how they're doing it.
There are people who are trying to reverse that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the problem. They're trying to slow that process as much. And then they're trying to, I think they've come up now, I just heard on some discussions about it, that they're almost to the point of making the UK like Puerto Rico to the EU as Puerto Rico is the US. Yeah. It's like, well, we're not technically, we still make our own rules and everything, but you kind of still tell us what to do all the time.
Yeah, with no voting rights.
Yeah,
no,
and you lose all the advantages of being part of the EU, but you still retain all the regulations and everything.
Yeah, so the other thing about libertarians in our group that has been irritating me this week is the podcasters that switched.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've over the last decade, heard so much bullshit for being a Libertarian Party person from some of these same very people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who, I'm a Rand and Ron Paul person. I just believe the Republican Liberty Caucus is the best way. But then as soon as their favorite podcaster switched, then it's cool to be a Libertarian Party person, which I'm making zero criticism of Tom Woods, Stapleton, those two. You know, I know Jason. I respect the hell out of both of them and Dave Smith as well. So it's not a criticism of them. It's a criticism a lot of times of the cult of personality that develops around people. If you are switching your political affiliation with one piece of criteria and it is because someone popular is doing it, then you need to reevaluate your value system. I'm happy that those guys are joining. I'm happy that they're making it socially acceptable to take a look at a third option, but or a second option, really, because which one of us is going to vote Democrat? None of us. But the reality is that so many people over on my social media feed are now joining. I joined too, and it's like, okay, did you join because someone told you that you should? Or those guys didn't even tell anybody. They just did it, okay? And to me, it's like, here's the point of what I do, okay? I'm a libertarian podcaster. We're the third or fourth largest libertarian podcast after Tom Woods, Jason Stapleton, and probably Dave Smith at this point. So probably number four. Because I know most of these guys, and we talk numbers, and we're pretty big. My job is not to tell anyone what to do or think. My job is to make you think. My job is to give you the output of what I am learning to help you figure stuff out. I tried to do my best to check my sources and check my facts and bring on interesting people and talk about discussions that are going on. But I don't want you to do anything or think anything because it's how I think or what I think, right? Yeah. Like, I'm right most of the time, but it's because I've thought deeply about it, and I want to make you think and give you a new perspective. But I don't want you to join a political party or not join a political party based on my word alone. Like, it has to be part of – I am part of your information diet, you know, and those guys are too. And I don't think that any one of them would say anything different. I don't think anybody in the libertarian movement, with the exception of – well, no. Those guys specifically, the reason they have big audiences is because they're not looking for a cult of personality following. They're not opportunists. They genuinely love libertarianism. They want to explain libertarianism. They want to get you more engaged in the political process. That's why we do this. And then the audience and the popularity and the benefits that come with that are just perks, right? Mm-hmm. But libertarianism comes first and foremost. Anybody who has the goal of being rich and famous as a libertarian, those people usually get chewed up and spit out. You know, like, look at Liberty Hangout. Those guys wanted notoriety. They got it.
Yeah, they did.
They sure did.
I just saw that TJ is no longer there.
TJ left. I wonder if we talked him into his senses. It's probably you and I, Reinhold. Yeah, let's take all the credit, even if we deserve none. Yep.
Everybody's taking credit for everything these days, so right. We just take ours.
So, you know, and I'm sure those guys agree, but, you know, we're here to make you free thinkers. We're here to make you better thinkers. We're not here to tell you what to think. And it just sort of drives me crazy when I see people even within our own group criticizing news sources instead of reading the material, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. criticizing other libertarians for being left because they believe in orthodox libertarian positions or doing things because popular people tell them so. You know, part of the this one guy made this meme of, you know, nine people basically who grew the Libertarian Party, and they'd all been Libertarian Party members for roughly a week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and like Ron mm-hmm. Paul was on it, and he's a Libertarian Party member, but he's indirectly grown the party more than anybody else because people like me are libertarians because of him. But in terms of getting people engaged in the party, he's probably been one of the worst proponents of keeping people from getting engaged in the party because right. he's so critical of it.
Right.
And so, you know, it was ironic that, like, my face isn't on that picture, for instance, mm-hmm. and it's because I've been saying the Libertarian Party's a viable option for a long time, and that wasn't cool.
Right. Yep.
And, yeah. you know,
and
so.
And then the center was the one person who's probably done a lot to help egg this on.
Nick
yeah.
Sarwark.
Yeah.
And then he was dogged in the meme. It was just crazy.
Yeah. Like, Sarwark was very instrumental of getting a lot of anarchists back into the party. Getting them
How?
Back. Well, he would go on, he would, because in Arizona, the other Liberty radio show in Arizona is Ernest Hancock, Declare Your Independence.
Right.
Sarwark would go on that show and keep egging Ernest and keep, you should come back, sign back up, come on in. If, you know, you guys can change this, you can get your thing going. And then it was just more of, if you don't like Gary Johnson, you don't like Build Weld, then show back up and vote.
Right.
Yeah.
Show back up.
And you know,
but if you're going to be anarchist and sit in the desert, then shut up.
Here's the reality of this convention. So in 2012, when Mark Rutherford lost by one vote for the chair's race mm-hmm. Because he was unpopular and Texas had a huge contingency there, the West brought a lot of people. I would say the more radical anarcho-capitalist wing of the party in 2012 was probably 45% to 48% of the delegates.
Mm-hmm.
This time it was probably 20,
yeah.
15 to 20. So the power of that sort of wing of the party, the Kokesh, the mm-hmm. Ernie Hancock wing of the party, yeah. has been cut in at least half
yeah.
over the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
And so those people have just left. And to me, the party has never been stronger. The party has never been more active. The party, this convention, everybody left on a note of unity, and it's because there were literally, I counted them, 13 people causing problems at this convention, and they all voted for Matt Keno. And, you know, like, it was 13 people. It was 20 people at most who were the troublemakers, and it was 300 mm-hmm. 5, 6, 7 years ago. So it's, to me, having those people not involved has been a good thing because this was a very functional mm-hmm. party, and the people that are left are people like Daryl Perry, who, while Daryl, you might have spent too much time at the mic on the platform and rules and bylaw stuff.
The establishment anarchist.
Daryl is a very, like, it's funny to see Daryl be the establishment of the anarchist
the
wing.
The father of the party, almost. He's up there just like telling what everybody wants. And I was glad he was there because
he was a party elder.
Yeah, he was saying things that I think needed to be said, and I think a lot of people were afraid to come up and say it, and he's not.
He
knew how to do it.
Because he was just like, why? You know, he was considered wild, but now he is. He's a party elder, and he's a very thoughtful person. It's because he's got experience, and he's like, I know how all this works, and I know all these people, and I'm involved. And it's He's not. He actually knows the power structure and how to manipulate the power structure to his designs, as opposed to just coming in like a bulldozer and ranting, "This is all bullshit, and I'm going to cause problems and be an asshole."
And he needs no microphone. He brings his own microphone.
Right. He literally had a karaoke machine. No, it's a joke.
No, he's just very loud.
Yeah, but like Daryl's a great asset to the party because he represents a certain wing of the party, but he does it in a way that's very functional.
Right.
And I think that's all people really want. It's like, so when we all quibble about, oh, this 10% that we disagree on, I don't agree with that. I think that we agree on way more. Mm-hmm. It's just that people choose to be difficult to other people, and that really is the problem. It's you're choosing to be a pain in my ass as opposed to, and for no other reason than you think that we're on opposite sides. If you just stopped trying to adopt that pose and have a conversation, you know, it's like and I'm guilty of this too. We're sitting there. I look at Arvin. I'm like, you heard it on the podcast. Do you guys want to interview Arvin? Mm-hmm. Do you want to interview TJ? All right, come on over. And then you end up meeting somebody who is thoughtful as opposed to a you know, oh, this guy must have rabies. He's crazy. No, he's very thoughtful. He just has a different way of doing things.
And that extends out. I mean, a lot of people don't understand this. When you're talking about Republicans and Democrats, these aren't people who are crazy and evil and want to take over the world for the most part. They're just people who are wanting to do the best for their country, and they just have a different view than you do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we disagree, but doesn't mean that they're evil people. You know, everybody hates on all these people in all the different. It just never seems to surprise me. It used to be in politics that people would be able to be on complete opposite sides of the table and still get along.
Right.
And have like Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan used to. They were complete bitter enemies because, you know, the Speaker of the House, the Democratic controlled House, the Republicans trying to do what he's trying to do. But they would meet for lunch every couple weeks on a regular basis and hang out outside of politics so they can keep that, you know, going. There's a picture of Bill Weld and what's his name? Kerry.
John Kerry.
Yeah, they were like, you know, on the trail fighting each other, but they were in a bar together having a drink and laughing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can still be okay with people and understand where they're coming from, but completely disagree with them.
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine if like a Democrat would have a beer with Trump right now?
Yeah, no, I think
it's not that way anymore. It's so you have to hate people. Like, you know, everybody's on Bill Weld because he doesn't hate Hillary. And I'm like, dude.
Yeah, that and it's on all sides. I mean, obviously the left is really the most egregious. Like, if you are so Sarah Huckabee Sanders, you know, you heard she got asked to leave the Red Hen
and she said okay.
But then the workers followed her to the next restaurant she went to and made sure she didn't get served there. You didn't really hear that part of the story.
Yeah.
And you don't like Stephen Miller, everybody who works in the White House is getting this. And at the end of the day, these are brown shirt tactics.
Mm-hmm.
When you're trying to remove people from society that you philosophically disagree with, you're basically a brown shirt. Like, you're doing things that are wrong. You're moving the country in a direction that is not good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and obviously, the right does it, and even people in our own libertarian group, out of 1,500 people that you think you can look at it and go, okay, this is my group of people. And, you know, even in there, there's people who don't, you know, and I'm not mad at them. They just aren't seeing things the way that I see, but maybe over time they will. You know, like John Ulrich, I think, is somebody who I have considered banning many times from my personal Facebook group and the group.
If I could ban Lou Rockwell, I think he'd be
happy. Right, but John has become moderated, I think, by being a part of our Facebook group, by having conversations with him. Because
I've actually noticed that the last month or two, that his demeanor has changed, and he's starting to basically just kind of stand up for some of the things that I was saying.
He's gone from a Republican-leaning bomb thrower to somebody who is more moderate, who is like enjoying the conversation as opposed to the shit posting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I like we have to be the first to choose to change things. Like, we can sit here and go, the liberals need to change, But at a certain point, you have to go, no, you know what? I'm going to be part of the change. I'm personally going to do things differently. I mess up all the time, and I say these things, and then I get called out by my own people, which is good because I get so in the moment and act like a base human being, and then somebody goes, isn't that the opposite of what you tell people to do? And you're like, I'm going to delete it. You're right. You know, like, yep. Because we all do it, and that's part of it. We need to watch out for each other, but we have to at least choose to be part of the solution. You can sit there and say, they should change, they should change, they should change, but until you take some responsibility for yourself, personal responsibility for how you act online, it's never going to change, because if you have the weapons out, somebody else is going to have their weapons out too.
Mm-hmm. And I think that moment in the chair debate where Nick Sarwar got up and admonished people and got the applause that he got for it.
About Bill Weld?
Yeah, it's what's been needed to be said, and he said it in such a great way that I think it's still resonating with people who heard it.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Jason?
You know, I don't remember.
Sorry about that.
Although I do, I came to the mountain and I brought offerings. So,
okay.
If it's okay, if we can have a break in the conversation.
If you come to the We Are Libertarian Studio, you need to bring offerings. That's how it works.
I did. So,
so first, let's start with Harry.
Okay.
Yep.
Harry, I want you to be properly hydrated with your sparkling mineral water. So there you go.
Thank
you. Some San Pellegrino.
It's very nice.
Got the good stuff.
Yeah. I am hoping you'll share one of those with me, however.
I will share.
Thank you. And then.
Not with you.
What else did you get, Harry?
Have your flat water.
Yeah, he's got his.
What else did you get, Harry?
What else did I get, Harry?
Uh-huh.
That was what I brought, Harry.
No,
the coffee maker. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry. Yes. That got shipped.
That's all right.
I forgot about that.
All right, so you got Harry, Harry, a coffee maker, and some sparkling water. Will you mix the two together?
No.
Okay.
No. Sparkling water,
maybe
coffee?
My stomach. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that fulfilled all my obligations for the 2018 contract that I signed with We Are Libertarians.
You got
all my perks that I.
Mm-hmm. You got water. You got a chair, and you got a coffee maker.
I know.
And a new mic, apparently.
Yep.
Yeah. I know. I was trying to give him the S7B, the $500 mic, but. The $100 mic works better, I guess.
I guess so. And then, of course.
Most importantly, what'd you bring me?
There you go. That is for you.
Seems very heavy.
Well. I'm a little sad because, well, I'll tell you. But, yeah, so that's for the kitties.
Okay. We got catnip. I thought it was weed there for a minute.
Well, which is why I stopped at Meijer instead of bringing it with me.
No, you can just take that label off and sell it as weed.
Right.
Now, this is quite a gift.
Yes.
This is beautiful. Now, you have gotten me.
For the man who aggressively hydrates.
No one knows. People don't know how much water I drink. I drink a gallon of water a day.
You drink the exact opposite of how much I drink.
Right.
Which is none.
So during the podcast, I've always got my 32-ounce and my 48-ounce Nalgene bottle with me. And I usually drink both of them during the show.
Yeah.
But these hydro flasks, I've heard nothing but good things about these.
That's a 64-ounce, the largest I could get. And I'm really sorry. As I was opening the trunk at Meijer, it rolled out and... There's a couple dents or scratches on the side there, so.
Well, I think you owe me a public apology.
I am very sorry
all
about
right,
that.
Thank you.
Yes, dear listener, I am sorry.
All right, this is. Wow. Yeah. Oh, I got a straw.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't know what you'd prefer. It seemed like it'd be a little too big to lift up and drink from, so. I thought the straw lid.
It's a two-hander for sure. Oh, see, here's a cool thing. So if it sounds like I'm in the bathroom. Harry, bring me my phone. I'm pooping. Could you imagine pooping without your phone in 2018?
Yeah, like when setting up the Wi-Fi at the new place, everyone was very upset because the Wi-Fi did not extend to the bathroom. They made me move a tennis.
Oh, well, thank you. That's very kind of you. That's so nice of you.
That is awesome.
Now,
huge.
Reinhold, it's your birthday, right?
Yes.
My birthday.
Yes.
What'd you bring? What'd you bring, Reinhold?
I'm really sorry. I genuinely didn't know you were going to be here. I would have brought you something.
This is awkward.
Yes. Very awkward.
Here, draw him a card. I've got a shirt.
Yes.
Draw him a card here. At least here. There was a ballpoint pen.
All right. All right. Thank you.
I never ask for things for my birthday. My wife gets mad, and it's like, I don't need anything for my birthday.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, we've seen other people get presents, I'm telling you.
Here, you can have some. You can have half the catnip. Yeah, take half
the catnip. I've got some cats who would love that, by the way.
Now, speaking of public apologies, Harry.
So I just wanted to, I'm just thinking about the coffee maker, because I have that. I'm sorry.
Hold on.
Are you getting misty?
Yeah,
because you're misty right now.
When I get my sparkling water, but the thing is, the coffee maker.
Uh huh.
I've got that exact same coffee maker. Uh-huh. And how I got that exact same coffee maker, I was running behind. I was having a very, very crappy day because my other coffee maker broke.
Oh.
And I walked into Rupert's Kids, upset that my coffee maker broke, and I kept stressing about it. Right.
Thank you.
And Rupert came out one of that, and he's like, "Here, take this." I was like, what do you, this is, you know, so like, that's awesome. This is the second time someone has given me a coffee maker. So.
No, we'll have to take a photo of our three gifts. My gift.
He's got a card
now.
I got
a card now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then your card.
I even drew him a heart. Open it up.
Open it up. I got a heart.
That is great. Yeah, so we'll have to definitely take a photo for the Facebook group. Now, you know, you're literally crying. Are you? This is amazing.
I love coffee.
It's so touching. You're literally tearing up, Harry. If you buy Harry $8 of water, he apparently just weeps like a woman. Now, Harry, speaking of public apologies,
yes,
you and I agree.
Witnessed this.
You and I agree. I'm owed a public apology.
Oh yeah, very much.
Can you set up the scene of?
We're sitting there at Boss Hog Liberty and Purse String Potter's wedding.
Yes, Sarah Potter, now Sarah Morrill, Jeremiah Morrill.
Sorry.
Very, very proud of them. They got married. Mm-hmm. I am the one who set them up. They met at the first We Are Libertarians Live. Yep. Romance was born. Mm-hmm, Sarah slid into my DMs, but she was very aggressive, and I'm very counter-dependent. And so I was like, you know, any woman who is this tenacious needs to go after Jeremiah because he will never date anybody if they're not persistent. And she got the prize,
mm-hmm.
which is Boss Hog.
Mm-hmm.
But you and I agree there's a public apology owed.
Exactly. We were sitting there at the reception, and they started to do their like thank yous and giving all these just like basically congratulating people to help them through their journey. And, well, there's one name they did not mention. Someone that was, you know, really should have been mentioned. And that was Dear Leader.
Oh.
Yes.
Totally rubbed.
I honestly thought I should have been thanked during the vows, but...
Personally, yeah. Yeah,
I mean, they would not have met if it hadn't been for me, and I couldn't even get a thank you, Harry.
Exactly. So, yeah.
But I did get a plus one, at least. I had fun with my date, and I had fun with Gunther.
Yeah. Yep.
Gunther was there.
Mm-hmm. Gunther behaved a lot during the wedding.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Bad news, guys.
No.
Gunther's in trouble, though. She doesn't like watermelon.
Yep. She does not like watermelon.
Lacey, your wife,
mm-hmm.
taps me on the shoulder. She goes, "You're never going to believe this. Gunther hates watermelon." And the whole table lost it. So, yes, it was a wonderful wedding. It was like 80 degrees and sunny and perfect. It just they couldn't have been more of a fun evening. It was just a great wedding. We were very happy for them. Both Dakota mm-hmm. and Boss Hog got married in the last 6 months. Very happy for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but kind of owe me a public apology.
Just a little. Just a little.
So if you're listening out there, right on Jeremiah, right on the Boss Hog of Liberty Facebook page's wall, that they mm-hmm. owe me a public apology.
Yep, exactly.
We're very happy for
yep.
them.
Because yep. you were standing there looking him in the eye, like, come on, I'm right here.
I was in the back of the room. I was a servant.
Mm-hmm.
I had a servant's heart through the entire wedding. Yep. Nothing. And you looked at me in the eye, Harry. You
I was like, because I thought he was going to do it. Like, here it comes. It's coming. It's
right.
He waited for the last. Did not come.
As the very end tag.
Yep.
And last but not least.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then Harry just looked up at me and said, public apology. Oh, well, very good.
So who were they thinking? Like, give me an example of who are they?
Oh, they were thinking aunts that I know they hate.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. They were thinking brothers and sisters that they talk crap about. No, I made this all up. I'm not trying to get them in trouble. No, it was like friends and family that helped. I mean, this was in their brother's backyard, and like it was a massive like undertaking to put this all together.
Oh, yeah. I mean, did they think the Uber driver that picked them up
basically.
After their first
yes.
date?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh,
anybody
yeah.
who did anything that day,
yeah.
except the
yeah.
person who was responsible
yeah.
for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the meeting. Yeah, Cade got a thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what Cade did at the wedding? He left his windows down and he got a thank you. That
mm-hmm,
was
mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
ridiculous.
Yep.
Very, very disappointed.
I know. It was just like, ugh.
Yeah,
I think Rex got an apology. Got a thank you too. Rex and Susan. Yeah.
Yep. For putting his lamps in a garage sale.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's how many thank yous there were, but not for me. Nothing.
Just couldn't be bothered.
Truth be told, I look at Harry at the beginning of the evening and I go, it would be a dick move for Dear Leader to demand a public apology for anything at this wedding, so we need to find something. and then as soon as they finished those thank yous, he looked at me and he's like, hey.
I kept waiting for you all night. Like, I'm kind of glad you don't drink, because you probably would have got drunk and like demanded the mic. I demanded the
mic. We had a great time. Aaron Ewert and Hannah and Aaron, who are together because of this podcast. Mm-hmm. Aaron is a dance machine.
Yes.
So
aggressively.
Aggressive dance machine. It was a great time. One of the best weddings I've ever been to. Except for the part where I'm owed a public apology.
Yeah.
But other than that.
Yeah.
So with Jason in town, made the trip up. We're gonna go eat fancy steaks tomorrow, and
really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I've never been to this fancy steakhouse. Harry, of course, has been and knows the chef.
Yeah.
Almost lost that.
Chef Sarge and Chef Todd. For Father's Day, St. Elmo's, like, put a photo of them up, and there was, like, you know, like, and they were talking about how many of the millions of steaks that they have cooked over the years they've been there, because they've been there for decades, you know? Like, Sarge is a huge staple downtown. I can't believe we've never met Sarge.
Right.
Because, like, he's everywhere. He's like the black guy that makes other black guys look bad.
Because, okay.
Like, other than Abdul, I've never seen a black man with so many jobs.
Okay.
Not only is he the chef there, he also, like, works part-time and does valet. He got a side hustle valet. When I was working, he was working daytimes up at Roche, working their cafe. Just always working.
Right.
You know, just the same thing with the same stream with Abdul is, like, always have multiple income streams. Because anything can happen. Someone could walk in. Like, that one thing just always stuck with me with Abdul, because, like, he's like, you know, you could sit there doing radio and someone's like, hey, Abdul, we're doing country or sports radio. Got to go. You know, so always have multiple streams. So
that would have ever happened to.
Yeah, that would never happen. No. Never happen. But, you know, so, like, watching Sarge, that's how I met Sarge, because all those multiple income streams that he has.
Right.
But he is an amazing chef. His honestly, I will say, like, because I've had him make me steaks before, because, like,
Harry Sarge, make me a steak, please.
I think the only
did
time
you have a little bell? Did you ring a little bell?
I one time did that and asked for a poached egg, and I swear he thought he was going to throw the egg at me.
Good. How did you get to know Sarge?
Working up there at Roche. I would see him. Yeah,
gotcha. No,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, so I would see him every day and get to hang out and talk with him and stuff like that. So,
we're going to go to a fancy schmancy dinner, but on Saturday, I have never fired a gun. To which many people cannot, especially, like, I've never smoked pot, I've never drank, I've never fired a gun,
mm-hmm.
I've never had, I've just lead a very boring life. As Joe Houtman likes to say, libertarians often like to fight for other people to live the kind of lives that they want, that they would not lead themselves. And I'm definitely that way. I'm a very conservative person. Are you a gun guy, Reinhold? You don't seem like it.
I'm not an anti-gun guy. I've got a couple guns, but I don't, like, go out shooting. I mean, I've got land where I can go shoot whenever I want, so it's not like a big deal to me. So.
Okay. I grew up in Plainfield, Indiana. It was 98% white. You could leave your front door open. Mm-hmm. Those two are not connected, but... And so it just was... I did not grow up in a gun family. You know, we grew up... My grandfather on my dad's side was, like, you know, into lilies. The only gun that my other side of the grandfather had was apparently a musket from pre-Civil War that... Reinhold and Jason were telling me about. So Jason wanted to take me shooting for the first time. I have absolutely no qualms with, you know, shooting a gun. I've just never been – I've had the opportunity. It's just like one of those things where it's like I don't know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So it's like I didn't have the patience at that event to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I'm just not going to fool with this. But Saturday we're going to go shooting.
Yeah, bang, bang.
And I've got a camera guy that's going to come with us.
Oh, that's exciting.
Bailey. So we're going to take some footage of it. So you can see how it goes. Be watching the Facebook page and the website for that here in the next week or so. But I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing. Let's assume that I have only touched a BB gun.
Okay.
And have allegedly maimed a baby goose with it.
Allegedly.
Listen, I'm sure
it was Canadian.
I'm sure there are a lot of people who are not a fan of the word retarded, but that's what I did to that baby goose. It was not good. I felt bad. He flew away eventually, but I just was
did
trying.
Did it?
It did.
Or did your mom put it in like the flyaway box?
No, this was yesterday. I'm talking about yesterday. Like it's right there. I live on the balcony and I have water out back, and so I have a slingshot. You can see my slingshot, and so. I just like to scare the geese away, and the noise of the cartridge when you shoot the BB scares them. Mm-hmm. So you don't even have to hit them, and I don't want to hit them because I don't want to hurt them.
Yeah.
But sometimes accidents happen, Harry, which is what I'd like to avoid on Saturday.
Would you Dennis the Menace in Plainfield?
No, this was literally yesterday. Like, the BB gun's right there. I'd never have had a BB gun or a slingshot until this month. But it was on sale. It was on clearance, so I got myself a BB gun.
You got to defend us from the invading Canadian
that's,
army.
That's right. So, I don't want to maim Harry, and God forbid, Jason.
Wow.
We go.
You'll have to deal with my wife if that happens.
That's right. yes, the baby goose went to a nice farm, Superfan Stone says. So, all right, if you're taking someone shooting for the first time, and I want to do this on the air because I'm sure there are people who are in the same boat. Now, mm-hmm. Stone is giving me instructions in the chat. He says, first, hold the gun.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, aim the gun.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, shoot the gun.
Yeah,
I'm guessing there's probably more to shooting a gun than that.
It's pretty basic, though, but yeah, you're going to take the thing, rack the thing, pull the trigger, and the thing goes bang.
Okay, I don't know what racking to me is when you tap someone in the balls in high school.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But yeah, basically, like you're going the first thing you really want to do before you even touch the gun is understand a gun first, like and understand like gun safety and how to be safe with it.
All right, so when I pull the trigger, a little flag pops out that says "bang," right?
Pow.
No. When you pull the trigger, it will the hammer goes back and the firing pin goes into the cartridge and it builds up pressure and it shoots a bullet. That's what happens.
Okay. I blanked out. I was reading the comments. Say that again.
You pull the trigger, gun go bang, and a bullet and a projectile goes out.
Okay,
and you can't take that back. Once your trigger has been pulled and the bullet struck with that firing pin, you cannot take that back. It is going forward,
okay,
at full speed, and at whatever you pointed that gun at,
or didn't aim it. You know,
so
I'm a visual
learner. Should we get the BB gun out and maybe take a look at that? That seems like a safe option.
The BB gun is safer. We do have a pistol off screen that I've already previously checked to make sure it was unloaded, but a BB gun is incredibly safer because you have people living underneath you and there's people around the table, so there's really not a good safe direction anywhere here.
All right, Reinhold, can you please grab the BB gun? So the way that a BB gun works, I found out, is that you have a CO2 cartridge, not the BBs, not the slingshot.
That's the safer option for him. You're right. Mr. Wilson over here.
All right. So I hold it like this, right? Like, you just hold it like
this. This is a BB gun. This is a BB gun. But you should still treat the BB gun like a regular.
Yeah. Right. No, I mean, that goose was really far away and it didn't do well afterwards. So, basically, I can't get this popped.
So I'm just looking forward.
See, this is how we get kicked off the
video.
Range.
You should do video this because I think it's going to be like trying to wrangle a six-year-old.
You know what? Honestly, this might be the best teaching tool is to give someone like a BB gun and just watch them like...
See what they do.
Because one thing I like to do too is take a dowel rod and stick it in my Glock, in the barrel, just so some people can actually see that lengthening of the stick outside that dowel rod, so they understand, like, okay, where they're taking this thing. Like, oh, I didn't realize I was pointing it there. It's like, yeah, that's, you know, just when you take it down, it's like, well, it's down. Like, yeah, but you kind of like went right across my leg, you went everywhere with this thing.
So, this is the most racist thing ever said in our chat. Someone says, don't let Harry teach you. He'll hold it sideways. Oh. Sir, I'm offended. This I'm is not offended. A Papa John's I'm podcast, offended. Okay? This
I'm,
is...
I'm offended.
So I can't get this undone. I'll probably have to take the CO2 cartridge out. But anyways, okay, so on a gun, mm-hmm. We've got... Here's the grip, right? You got okay. the grip.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the trigger.
Right, and the trigger guard.
Yep. Right. And this is...
Triggered.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
this,
so,
if it was yeah. an epi, you're sliding, and you've got your breech. Okay. Now, the other thing...
Wait, this, what's this here?
So, yeah, this would be your slide.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
That part would move.
I shouldn't do this here on camera with this thing.
Yeah, go ahead. Please give that a nice stroke, please.
But, yeah, and this right here, the...
Go ahead. You can hold my BB gun.
This piece right here.
Uh-huh.
This is where your bullets will, your shell casings will eject out of after it has been fired.
Okay.
They'll eject out of here, and they'll come out. They literally will pop out.
Right.
You know.
Will it pop out at my face?
If you put your well. Face there, yeah.
Well, okay.
Don't put your face there. Of course, I've also seen like it come off, hit the side yeah, of the thing, and hit somebody.
I imagine it's hot, so I don't want to. You know, I don't want. I got to protect the moneymaker, Jason.
If you don't want a shell in your bra, make sure you wear a nice like yeah, higher most,
okay.
High neck,
okay.
Most gun ranges actually specify not to wear low cut tops for women.
Yeah.
Reinhold.
No. Well, my wife did send me a little message. She wanted me to make sure that you learned the way she learned. Is that you have to have at least two beers before you can start shooting.
Wow.
This is 2018. It's three, okay?
My wife, I've got a picture of my wife with a 22 in her hand and a wine glass in another.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Okay, so I've got the safety on here. All right, and so what... Oh, shit! Okay. Oh,
I think we just learned a valuable lesson
okay.
today.
This, no, I won't. That won't happen. Oh, shit! Okay, here.
Maybe we should start with a little bit more basic gun safety.
Oh, okay, so...
Keep your booger hook off the trigger.
Off the bang...
Oh, shit! Yeah. Oh, here, take
stop
this.
It. Stop
take
it.
This from
stop
me, it. Please.
Yeah, so the number one rule that I was taught was always handle the firearm as if it were loaded, even mm-hmm. if you know it's not.
Right, okay.
And then number two was keep your finger off the trigger at all times until you are ready to fire.
Right.
Three was know your target and what's beyond it. And four was only point the gun at the things that something you're willing to destroy, I think is the yeah. way that they put it.
Yeah. Okay, I've heard those rules. Those seem yeah. like common sense rules.
Yeah, and honestly, if you just only remember the first one to always handle the firearm as if it were loaded, even if you know it's not,
mm-hmm.
The likelihood of you making a mistake or having an accident is very low.
Right.
It drops it very,
yeah.
very low.
Yeah. yeah. Which means you always point it in a safe direction. You don't point it at people. And even when you're holding it down, you like Harry was saying, you don't point it at people's legs or feet.
Yeah.
Right.
Ideally, you don't point it at a hard surface where it may ricochet if it fires mm-hmm. accidentally.
This is a lot of responsibility for someone as spazzy as I am, which is why I've never fired a gun because I'm like, I'm too hyperactive.
What did Kristen call you at the convention?
I forget.
Like a man child that she had to follow around?
I'm a baby. Is basically, yeah.
Baby.
She basically
right.
called me a baby. She's not wrong. I listen. I just I'm in talks with a personal assistant right now, and that person will be highly underpaid.
And when it comes to it, it's safer in its holster.
Okay.
Yeah.
When she's ready to use this thing, and that's why like people say like guns are incredibly safe because once they're in their holster, they're pretty much safe.
Mm-hmm.
The trigger's you know covered up. You're just, you know nothing's going to accidentally get in
right.
there while it's inside its holster.
Right. Right,
it's not going to get up and walk away and yeah. kill a bunch of people at a school or anything.
So you
does make awful scrambled eggs.
It does.
Ever let your gun make you eggs?
So you have bullets right there.
Yes,
and so that goes into the handle of the gun.
So this is a magazine.
Okay,
not a clip. Thank you.
What's the difference between a magazine and a clip?
Well, a clip was a way that there were certain rifles that they would literally come on a clip, and then you would kind of put it into it was in the well of a rifle, a semi-automatic rifle. I think I don't remember the
like an Uzi type looking thing? Like
no, it was during the Second World War, I
yeah,
believe, and
yeah.
they would just five or six rounds at once. They just push it in, and then mm-hmm. they just throw this clip away.
Yeah.
It was a kind of a rapid way of
loading,
reloading
quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah, that's it. It was just push.
The point is just to have the bullets like in a line,
yeah,
so you could push it in
push
there,
it in.
And it would pop them out and put them in line. Then you could take it and toss it because
yeah.
it would be loaded inside.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah, which was terrible. They corroded. They got jammed.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a magazine.
Right.
And then you put the, just like with my BB gun, basically, yeah. the BB gun, you pull this little guy back here, and you know, you pull this back here, and then you put the BBs in here,
mm-hmm.
and then you release it.
Yeah.
And then...
And so this is under tension, so that right. when the next... So as the next round advances into the firing chamber, then the next round is ready to be... Yeah. So as the action cycles, then it'll pick up the next round
okay.
and be ready to fire.
Okay.
This weapon has been cleared and checked off screen.
Okay.
He did, in fact, do that.
Yeah. He did.
But yes. I am going to also do it again.
Okay. This is a 38 special
revolver. Yeah, a 38 special revolver. It looks like one of those little old Western guns. Like
Taurus Ultralight.
Okay.
It's really actually a not a fun gun to shoot. This is actually not fun.
Why?
Because it's an ultralight.
Yeah, so light. Yeah, there's a lot more recoil.
Like kickback, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's easy to carry.
But it hurts your hand when it kicks back?
Oh, yeah.
It's not heavy in the purse. That's why it was carried around a lot.
Not heavy in the purse. It's also very inexpensive. Like, so this gun is actually, if you go to my, if you're ever at my house, this one you'll find in the bathroom.
Well, don't tell people.
What?
I'm guessing you're not going to make it to the bathroom, to be honest, though.
Yeah. No. Well, no.
How many? Wait a minute.
If someone breaks into the house and you're in the bathroom, I want like so. Let's say Reinhold was in there peeing, right? And someone starts shooting. I want Reinhold to be able to cover me
to know that's there.
He can get in the tub.
Hello, hello. is somebody here?
And return fire.
Can you get the 38 special, please? Now, how many guns around the house do you have?
Enough. All right. So,
and that's a Saturday night special, right? It's what they used to call them.
Well, Saturday Night Specials was supposed to be like with Dean for like the cheap gun that anyone can really pick up really cheap. So, yeah, you could probably call it that.
Okay, so, and then the BB gun
this
is,
one's a little bit more like
is shaped like
though.
A Glock, right?
No, that's that's got the shape of what we call 1911.
Yeah. Okay.
Glocks are ugly.
Okay. They're a little more like...
I love my Glock.
Glocks are, yeah.
They're great. They're ugly. Yeah.
So this is basically, because it's so small and light, it's mainly like a self-defense weapon, right? Like, you take this, you put this in your...
It can, but yeah.
In the front of your pants or back pocket.
Well, it depends on the era, too.
Back pocket or how you want to... me, personally, I don't like carrying revolvers on my side because they hurt, they pinch. Then you've got this hammer that can get caught on clothing and stuff like that. But they do make ones that are half shrouded hammers on them. Like I said, like... Because of the cylinder, like I said, it's not as flat, so it doesn't lean flat, so it likes to show itself, you know, like, so it's very showy, like, so if I have this on my side, you can tell I have this in my pocket, or it's on my side.
Yeah, they print a lot.
Yeah.
So which is why you prefer to carry what?
I prefer mostly carry my Ruger LC380, mm-hmm. so it's a little itty bitty 380, and I don't care what you guys give me crap for, I love my little 380. I love the little thing. Fits in my pockets, very lightweight.
380s are great self defense firearms.
Yeah. You know,
you wouldn't want to take it to a pistol shooting competition, but
I would take mine to a pistol shoot.
I don't know if they would let you though. Most of them are 9mm and above.
I know, but it's so accurate though. I'm so accurate with it.
Well, because you know.
what kind of gun do you normally have with you? Do you carry one mostly?
I do. I've been carrying since 08-09. Whenever what was it? That hurricane that hit New York.
Oh, Sandy?
Is it Sandy? Yeah. My wife and I decided that I remember seeing that on the news, and it was like looting. 3 days. Yeah, there's looting within like 3 days. And we just was like a suburban neighborhood, kind of like where we were living. I was like, well, that's how fast people. So we decided to start arming ourselves. And it was 08 or 09. And I bought a Smith & Wesson 45. It's a semi-automatic, the M&P 45.
Nice.
So yeah, it's a nice firearm. It's heavy. I've actually been thinking about moving to the Glock 9mm.
That's a nice gun.
Yeah,
I like.
See, for me, it's so confusing because there's all these different makers and calibers and all these, and it's just like it's hard to wrap your mind around.
It's kind of like when you first learn how to drive a car.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter what model and everything you drive it. There's a lot of idiosyncrasies between all the different cars, and you want to learn all that stuff, and you can become a real car guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But otherwise, you get in the car, you turn it on, you push the bell,
right,
and you go.
Right.
You
know,
it's not,
and honestly, as your first experience should be a fairly small caliber, because it needs to be something that you're going to be able to control more easily. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I was looking at Indy Arms for gun rentals, and they've got some 22s that I thought would be a good good gun to start for you to start with.
Yep. It was it Crowder who took those girls in for the first time and gave them, like,
it's really funny to watch somebody shoot a 500 Magnum Smith & Wesson for the first time, but, you know, it'll break their arm, and then they never want to hold a firearm again.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what about a bayonet? How can I put a bayonet on this?
Which one?
Any one of them.
Well, my
BB gun would
probably be easier, because it does get that rail system on it.
All right, okay.
And the Picatinny rail, so you probably could attach a... Usually people use those for lights, but, you know, you can
and lasers, but you can get one that...
infrared laser.
Or grenade launcher.
Mm-hmm. I've got an 1838 musket.
Yeah, but...
that would be good for a bayonet.
But if but you put a bayonet on this and they get that close, you can use that, you probably already lost. You probably already lost.
Listen,
or you're the aggressor.
Listen, James Neese, I thought, broke into this apartment once, and it was before a podcast. He was 40 minutes early, and I came around the corner,
I remember that.
Fully nude, with a cloth over my crotch and my fist cocked ready to go. I don't need a firearm. I've got nudity and my arms, and I'm ready to swing. It was... I fucked James Neese up. That's how bad it was. Seeing me naked is no picnic, let me tell you.
Now, with the revolver, most people like to say this is like a ladies' gun. A lot of people like to give ladies this gun. I actually, I fall into that trap.
Sexist?
When I first bought this, I thought it was a lady gun, and I got it for Lacey. And, you know, actually using it and seeing it around, and I realized how sexist and wrong I was at the time, you know. And I felt stupid about it, but, you know... I paid the stupid tax, but I still enjoy having this tiny gun around the house. She doesn't enjoy it. She's got her, you know, she went and got a Ruger LC. That's where I got mine, because I used hers. It's like, this is awesome. And I went and bought one, too.
So when you're carrying a gun around, like, my fear is that you're carrying a gun around that it'll accidentally go off, or, like, how do you prevent it from discharging when it's...
Don't touch it.
Don't touch it.
I mean, really, if you put it in a holster and you've got it, in your pocket or in your...
safety on.
Yeah. You know, that's funny, because when I'm carrying mine, oftentimes, like, at the end of the day when I take it out, like, the safety's been off for, you know, however long, but...
I only own one gun with a safety.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the AR-15 has a safety. The rest of them do not.
They don't have trigger safeties?
Yeah, it's... Oh, you can say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well,
technically, the trigger is the safety, yeah.
Well, I was thinking, like, with your
Glock. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not that much safe there.
No. Right. No, but if you drop it, it's not going to go off, or at least it's not supposed to.
Most modern guns from, what is it, 19... I want to say the 80s up, will not fire if you drop them.
Right.
Will not fire. Like the FBI agent, the reason why that gun fired is because he grabbed it.
Yeah.
He grabbed it and tried to pick
it. It's when he grabbed it, it was when it off. Okay. It wasn't when it dropped.
If he'd just put his hands up and just stopped and breathed for a second,
I'm
freaked out.
I'm very fidgety about everything, and I hate things in my pocket, and like adding another, like a big weapon on my, like I'd be afraid that I'd fidget with it.
We're going to give you one bullet at a time.
Thank you. I'm Barney Fife. That's exactly who I am. I'm Barney Fife. I will shoot my foot.
No, but really, if you're in, it's all about developing habits, and habits of safety. And so if you're in a habit of, like, you know, because I always carry my firearm on my right side. I have both in what they call inside the waistband and outside the waistband, IWB and OWB. And I carry, but it's always on my right side. And
do they make like holsters for inside and outside?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it just depends on clothing and just kind of what I'm doing for the day and where I'm going is where I'll choose to wear it, either in the waistband or outside the waistband. But, and fortunately now in Texas we have open carry, so, you know, if I'm carrying outside the waistband and like my shirt lifts up or something, it's not it's not illegal. Before it was technically illegal, but I still prefer to carry concealed.
Are you saying you broke the law?
Well,
misdemeanor. Out of the country.
I mean, I did speed on the way here.
Oh, no.
It's literally 30 seconds away. I don't.
Well, I mean, from the airport to get here. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's 465 is a racetrack.
465 was crawling. Actually, there was an accident. It was moving really slow. But Yeah. So anyway, but if you just if you leave it alone, you don't touch it, and you just have certain habits that you've mm-hmm. into, like I will adjust mine, but I always grab the whole holster, not the firearm itself. You know, because sometimes it'll shift a little bit if I've been sitting in the car or what have you. So. Mm-hmm. But those are just the things you have to do. And then especially at home, again, having habits of safety, mm-hmm. Is also important. So it's either on my person or it's in a locked safe.
Yes.
And yes. Yeah. And in the rare instance when I have to take it off to do something and I can't immediately put it away, I'll drop the magazine, I'll rack the slide, and I will lock it open so that the whole gun, you couldn't fire it. Even if you wanted to, just in case one of my, not, and it's always within my sight, so yeah. I don't,
Yeah, because kids are curious.
Yep,
sure.
Kids are curious. Yep. Although, it's funny. My kids will. I'll hold it up to them and I'll say, "What is this?" And they'll say, "It's your pistol." And I'll say, "Okay, and what are the rules? Never touch. Okay, and if you see it, what do? Go get mommy and daddy. Do you bring the gun to mommy and daddy? No." Go get mommy taken.
Right.
All right. Very good. So mm-hmm. I've been teaching them this since, as soon as they could talk, learning that. So and reinforcing it. Because mm-hmm. Again, that's one of those habits of safety that we're in my house.
Right.
Yep.
So you keep it in a safe, but what happens if somebody breaks in? You got to make it to the safe in time to protect everybody or?
Safe or person.
Yeah.
So it keeps it. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No. Yeah, so it's either on my person or it's in a safe. Now, I have a couple safes in the house. The big safe where most of my firearms are is in the master closet. But I have where I keep my EDC pistol, which is my .45. That's in a small safe that it just slides underneath my bed.
Oh, okay.
And it's biometric. So I just swipe my finger and it pops it open.
See, that's smart.
Yep.
It's very fancy.
Yep. Which you can get a nice biometric one for, like, the Glock 9mm, so you can leave it in your truck mm-hmm. if you have a truck. I once mounted my friend. We mounted his.
You once mounted your friend, did you?
Mounted his safe.
I heard that. That's what I heard.
We're going to cut this out of the podcast.
What'd you hear?
Make sure that it gets
mounted. There's no editing. There's no editing.
We're going to be able to hit a button and just play it whenever we want.
And we mounted it there on the inside of his truck, so it would, especially the bolts of the safe, were bolted right into the transmission.
Yeah.
So if you try to jack on the thing, you're jacking the whole transmission.
Yeah, I have in my car and in our family car, there are two steel safes with a steel cable that goes around the frame of the mm-hmm. driver's seat.
Wow.
And so you can, so if, for example, I'm going into some place that doesn't allow the firearm to be carried, mm-hmm. then I can, but we all use it sometimes for
This is America. You can take your gun wherever you want. We have a Second Amendment for a reason.
Yeah, but we also respect private property rights.
That's right, yeah. So you can carry them in most government buildings in Texas, but there's certain, a lot of the museums that we'll take our kids to, they won't let us bring our firearms.
Yeah.
So,
we
just lock it in there. And mm-hmm. But we'll use it for cash sometimes, too, if we're traveling. But, for the most part,
that's
it's
cool.
The guns.
Hmm. Yeah. But,
anything else that I need to know before Saturday?
Probably about a million.
Yeah,
do I need a life jacket?
No, but you will need
a flak jacket, maybe.
You'll need to wear
close-toed
shoes.
Jacket. Yeah. Close-toed shoes.
I'm going to need a helmet.
Not helmet. You're going to need hearing protection, and we'll get you some goggles. But
yeah,
they'll have
we'll probably rent them there.
We'll just rent them there. Unless you like you, then you can get your own headset.
Yeah. Don't go with sandals and shorts. And,
probably not good. You could wear shorts, but I would definitely recommend long pants.
Well, the thing is, I'm afraid of, he pulls trigger and it ejects that mm-hmm. cartridge. It could hit you. If it's warm, it can...
And then, and also a lot with the the indoor places with the air filtration, they're mm-hmm. moving so much air, they can get pretty chilly.
I don't have that problem. Yeah. 65 degrees in here.
Yeah, I know.
Is it?
It's a little chilly. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's freezing.
Whose side are you on?
It's not about sides,
I was going to wear a sports
jacket. I'm sitting here wearing a sports jacket, and I'm still a little chilly.
I'm a little warm, to be honest. Yep. You got to, if you don't keep the, it's like Letterman Studio. If you don't keep the air going, it just mm-hmm. you're going to fall asleep, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I do not have life insurance, Christy Avery, and you are not the beneficiary. But if you want to trade life insurances, since we're both single.
This is my Glock 22.
All right.
Oh, it's a 22?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes. So it's a full-size 40 S&W Glock.
What do any of those mean?
Glock is the company, 22 is the series, full size is the frame size, and it shoots 40 SMW. That is the bullet.
Okay. The size of the bullet.
Gotcha. And 22 caliber, 32, what does any of the calibers mean? What does that mean?
Caliber refers to the size of the cartridge, so or the bullet, the actual bullet itself.
Okay, so show me a bullet, please, and explain the bullet.
The bullet's made up of a couple different parts. So you've got the projectile, which is that flat nose kind of part of the right there where your left index finger is. And then you've got the shell, which is the silver part. You've got your powder, which you can't see is inside the shell. And then the right there at the tip of your finger, that's the primer. So that's where the firing pin will strike.
Okay.
It'll create a little spark, and then the powder will ignite. Right.
So is the whole thing the bullet?
Well, or is it some of these words get a little loose with how people use them.
Yeah.
But most people refer to that whole thing as the cartridge.
Okay.
At least that's what I most commonly
hear. So which part's going to kill me? Just the gold part?
That part. Yeah. And that particular projectile is a hollow point, jacketed hollow point. So it's a copper jacket over a lead core with the center removed. So it's jacketed hollow point.
And why do you do that?
Well,
so there's
why,
little.
Why do you? I can tell you why I choose jacketed hollow point. Why do you choose jacketed hollow point?
I choose jacketed hollow point because when it touches something soft and squishy, it expands and gets very big.
Right.
Yeah. So explain the reason why you and the hollow points basically when they hit a target.
Soft target.
Yeah, soft target.
So there's like little grooves here at the tip, and that I'm sure that expands out like a little meat grinder.
Sorry about that.
It's okay.
They open up like that. So they don't. They don't go as far through soft things as a full metal jacket.
But they expand out and do a lot of.
And they cause more damage. Like in a person's body, they tend to cause more damage. Mm-hmm.
So a full metal jacket would not have this flat nose. It would be a point.
It's not always a point. It may be rounded. Some will have a point.
Okay. And then so a 22 caliber is. Like, so there's explain the cartridge.
There's
size.
There's kind of two ways you can measure these. It depends on who originated the. So a lot of ammunition companies or rifle companies will kind of create a cartridge for a specific purpose, or maybe they're looking to market a firearm or something. But they're either being measured in imperial units or inches, or they're being measured in metric. So the millimeter. Yeah,
right.
Those dirty Europeans.
We're down for imperial or else. Yeah.
So like 22 caliber that's 0.22. So that's 0.22 inches. That's how that's the width of the bullet. Okay.
Okay.
His 40 caliber, that's 0.40, so that's 4/10 of a bullet, or excuse me, of an inch. My 45 is 0.45, so that's 4/45 of an inch. But then your 9mm, it's 9mm.
Okay.
Width.
So I've heard a 22 is going to stop you, but not necessarily kill you. I mean, if I'm fighting bears, what should I take?
If you're fighting bears, run away.
Right. Okay. Well, listen.
30-06.
There's a lot of bears. I'm talking about the gay bears. I didn't mean the. So 22s are not.
If you're fighting gay bears, just bring extra lube.
Just enjoy the ride.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Some people call a 22 a BB gun.
Whatever you do, don't lay down and play dead. So it's called what?
A BB gun.
Yeah. Okay.
Well. And a 22 caliber, most of those cartridges.
I've got a BB gun here. Oh, geez, Reinhold. Be careful. It's your birthday, but you're going to shoot somebody.
Yeah, but a lot of people like to just, try to get the gigantic caliber and, like, look what I can do with this thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not really practical.
Yeah, and then the myth of stopping power. This got the stopping power.
Now, versus shot placement.
Yeah.
What caliber was the Joker's gun at the end of Batman with Michael Keaton?
Oh, with that long barrel thing?
Jeez. I forgot about that. That was a revolver, too.
Yeah, it was a revolver. I can't remember.
It was about 3 feet long. Yeah. It was hysterical.
It had to be a 45.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah. Or a 22 Magnum, which would be funny.
50 or something.
So what's a Magnum mean?
That's the how much how much powder basically they put in the cartridge. So
okay,
it's more forceful, so it's coming out at a faster. The projectile's coming out at a faster speed is what it usually translates to. Mm-hmm.
Now Stone says the effectiveness of a 22 depends on how angry the person is. What does that mean?
No.
So it depends on the person. If he's talking about the person firing it, I think he's probably talking about the person being shot. So if somebody's angry and they're coming at you and you're shooting them with a 22, if that's what he means, then yeah, there's probably not much that's going
to
do to them.
They'll be more likely to shrug it off, mm-hmm. as much as it were. Like, it's not going to hurt them so bad that it's going to break through any psychosis they're in the middle of.
Why even have a 22 then?
Because a 22 to the heart still puts,
kill you.
Yeah, will kill you.
Okay.
We'll still put
if you hit the right spot. I mean, if you hit somebody in the arm at 22, they might go.
But realistically, you're going to fire six. You're not going to fire.
Well, no,
one,
yeah, you
right?
should always if you're when you pull that trigger, you know, you're pointing it to intend to destroy whatever you're pointing it at. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Don't just do one and go. Let's see how that goes.
You keep shooting. You keep shooting until the threat is gone.
Right.
Unless it's fully semi-automatic, and then you can just pull the trigger back, and it'll just do itself.
Right. Okay.
You can just let it go out in front of you and do it for you. You can stay in the car. That's the fully automatic.
I choose you. Go 1911, go.
But another way to look at whether, you know, why have a 22 as opposed to a different caliber. I mean, there's a lot of philosophies as to why, you know, carrying a firearm. Some people just want to carry it as an expression of their personal or individual liberty, you mm-hmm. know. There may be some that they feel like, well, I just need to brandish it, and you know, that's all I'm going to do, or it just needs to make noise. I don't know. I mean, it's not. Most people would agree that it's not a great personal defense firearm. So
right.
There probably are better options. But if you're looking for something compact and light, mm-hmm. the 22 caliber is going to fit that bill.
Cheaper too.
Yeah,
bullets are really
they're
cheap.
Incredibly cheap.
Easy to learn. The 22 will also give you time. If you say, let's say you've got like a Glock in the truck and you've got the 22 in your pocket, mm-hmm. that 22 will give you time to retreat to your truck to get mm-hmm. a bigger weapon or to a rifle.
Yeah. Right. Now the other reason why you'd have a 22 is you have a 22 rifle if you're out hunting mm-hmm. small game.
Yes.
Yeah. You don't want to, you know, hit that with a 45 yeah. or something. You're gonna or an AR-15.
Yeah.
You're not gonna have anything left to eat if you do that.
Okay.
It's the survival rifle, that one that breaks down. You know what I'm talking about? It's who makes that? Henry. The Henry survival rifle?
Yeah, that one is like, yeah, it's like,
yeah, like it fits into, because that's a good one. Yeah. Like you can carry 100 rounds of 22 ammo and it weighs half a pound.
Yeah, because it goes with your rifle, your handgun. It's really small. Yeah. It's really, yeah.
Pen guns are 22s. Yeah. Yeah, they are. No, I got lost on YouTube one day looking at pen guns for some reason, and it was like they had one and you like take it and then it turns into a little revolver and I was like, this is amazing, like you can assassinate people with this. I'm like, well, you shouldn't put that on video.
Yeah, but if you wanted to assassinate someone, it's other easier ways to take somebody out.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, like Russia, they just. Poison you.
Heart attack.
Or you can take an axe can, a condom, a lighter, you know, and some thyme and some rubber bands.
There is a great documentary.
Make a frag.
There's a great documentary on Netflix that I watched yesterday called Icarus. And it basically starts out where the guy is going to try and recreate the doping stuff that Lance Armstrong did. And then mm-hmm. he ends up in the middle of the Russian doping scandal. It's amazing. Great, great documentary. All right, so let's start wrapping up. Any final thoughts on any of this? What's this weapon that you have brought out here?
That's the Glock 22.
Okay, may I hold it?
Yes, you may.
All right,
got it. Watch your booger hook.
Listen, I'm not gonna
watch
joke
your
around
fingers
with this.
In the slide. If it bites him, that's a. It's a drinking game. If the slide bites him, it's a shot.
So you said this is a 22?
No, it's a Glock 22. It shoots 40 S&Ws.
But a 22 caliber.
It's not a 22 caliber.
It's a 40 caliber.
Right.
Correct.
Okay. Why is it called a 22 then?
It's Glock, the model number.
Yeah.
Can I speak to Glock and maybe we clear that up a little bit?
No, those Austrians don't care what you think.
It's kind of...
they're too successful.
Successful, yeah. And also got the Trichicon sights on it, so I see it in the dark. You can't. Nice.
Wait, you can see in the dark?
If those lights are off, you could see the sights on there. Those glow for me.
They glow.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
that's
so
cool.
When you're looking down the barrel, it's easier to get your sight picture, but the person that you'd be pointing at can't see it.
Yeah, because if you got a light, if it's not too bright, you know, you're just like, oh, there you are in the dark.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So that's why, like, so when that, I like to have like the glow sticks with me. So I can snap a glow stick and throw it, and then I can light them up where they are.
Interesting. See, that's smart.
So you light the glow stick, throw it down the stairs, and it's like, so you can see them, and they can't see you.
So I was going to say, this is a very German-looking gun, and it said it's made in Austria. Yeah. So it's a very, very, like, you know, German World War II Ruger type. Yeah.
Did you just call my Glock 22 World War II?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not as cool as the Saturday Night Special or whatever. It's
probably because you got the slide all the way back. If you had it, you probably wouldn't.
No. It's not that. It's not. Listen, this is like the toy gun. The Midnight Special or whatever this is. It's like the gun you played with when you were a kid. It looks like a cap gun.
Oh yeah. Well, the revolver. Yeah. There, yeah.
Yeah. So it's
the cap guns were a model with a Colt 45.
Right.
It was just a version of it.
So with this, you just pull it back and then you shoot, and then with this one, you pull the hammer back.
No,
you don't have to.
You don't have to.
But you can.
When you pull the trigger, it will pull the hammer back and then release it. Or you can pull the hammer back and have it ready to go, so it's a quick release.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You would put the bullets in here like that, and you would just put the cylinder in.
Uh huh.
Once the cylinder's in, you just pull the trigger.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. So
now you can cock this back, which will lighten this trigger pull.
Right.
But yeah, that's it.
And I hate to confuse you even further, but there are revolvers that are designed where you have to cock them back. It's called single action only.
Yeah, single action, yeah.
And but for the vast majority of modern revolvers that you're going to find, unless you're like my father-in-law is big into cowboy action shooting, so he shoots these revolvers, but he has to like cock it back with his thumb.
Right.
If he just pulled the trigger, it wouldn't do anything.
That's like Wyatt Earp. Wyatt Earp with the hand.
And that's right. So, but almost all the revolvers now are the double action, single action.
That's why it's ridiculous when we're like, we're going to ban all semiotic weapons. It's like, okay, then it's really going to get Wild West out there.
Yeah, because balls will be everywhere.
Right.
I can't aim. Don't get time to aim.
So you got 5 bullets in this one, but then you get how many in the Glock 22?
Enough. I get 15.
Okay.
15 right. Plus one on the chamber.
Legally. 15,
like, how much 15. Does all this stuff cost? Like, it seems like it probably cost a lot to
Let's
me.
See, the Glock used cost me around, I want to say $375.
Sounds about right.
Oh, that's not as expensive. If,
unless my wife is listening, then it's $300. Yeah, it's $300. if she's listening, this revolver cost me, I want to say $200. And... So yeah, those are the prices.
I figured it'd be more expensive.
Yeah, you would think that.
But then you got to like clean them. then like how much cleaning?
The cleaning kits are super easy.
Yeah,
like
they're cheap. Yeah,
yeah. You'll spill more than you actually used to clean.
Do you like what? You lube them or what?
Yeah, you lube them up. And
there's like a solvent / lubricant. It's kind of your common cleaner, and then you lube them afterwards.
Yeah.
Wipe them down with
the Glock. You just put in your dishwasher upper rack. Okay, you let that go.
Is that real?
No.
Okay,
it actually might go. I won't do it. Though.
I would not
recommend
that.
With the way Glocks are built, it probably would be just fine.
Yeah,
after that.
Yeah. Because I had to break the trigger, the little plastic piece inside of the trigger, and I was able to get this thing to fire by jamming a pen in that hole and let it go around the pen, and it just kept shooting with the pen in there.
All right.
These are on. These microphones.
I was at Camp Atterbury doing it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
As long as soldiers were involved, the laws were broken.
Speaking of which, you know, my wife is in the National Guard, and she's a dentist in the National Guard, so she doesn't get to do a whole lot of weapons training, but one summer a couple years ago, she got to do it as part of her annual training, and the range officer lubed her gun up with the 9mm that she was carrying. It turned out it was a window cleaner or something. It was unlabeled, so
oh
he didn't
gosh.
Know what it was. Anyways, there was no lubricant at all on that gun, and it kept jamming, and it was not a fun firing experience for her. So proper lubrication is important.
And buying a high point gun is very
Did she tell you that?
Yeah. And a high point is very good to learn how to clear a jam.
That's a great point. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's high point?
It's a brand of firearm.
Okay. Yeah, it's a brand. Yeah, it's a stamped metal gun, like lifetime warranty. They guarantee the gun for life.
Okay.
So never clean it. But it's you can get it for like $75 or $100.
Yeah.
Super
really?
Dirt cheap. Yeah. But and it will jam on you constantly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But it will teach you how to clear a jam mm-hmm. safely because it will jam. Like the Glock doesn't really jam on me unless I, you know, it's dirty or I effed up. You know, I held
it.
I didn't
burst it.
Yeah.
What when it jams, what does it do?
Jam is basically like it's the sequence of events. So when it's trying to eject that cartridge, it will either jam there in the slide, like in the breech of the slide, or you could get a double feed where it's trying to feed up and just didn't eject or get stuck inside there. Since you're so new to the gun and the gun range, if that happens, something doesn't happen, just put the gun down. Do not look at it. Don't try to fix it. Let me come in and try to fix it.
Or the range officer. Yeah.
Let them do it. Do not do it yourself.
Right.
Because I've been at so many different ranges when someone goes and they take something and they're like, I had an AK-47 just sweep me like this and someone sitting there that and you just go like, I was sitting at Camp Atterbury and I just put my hands up and back up.
Yikes.
And watch that RO come out of there. It's like, you're done today. You're done. You're done. Mm. You're done. What? You're done.
Yeah.
Because he took that AK-47 and pointed literally the whole line.
The whole line, Yeah.
All right. Well, we got to start wrapping up. We're out of time. I'm trying to keep these shows to 90 minutes. We're a little over, but
low key wall time, huh?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. No. The Google Analytics or the Apple Analytics. I'm sorry. Apple now has analytics on podcasts, and people listen to 90 minutes of the show, which is really, really strong. We have really good numbers
at 90 minutes
on retention, but just in general, like 90 is really good. But I want to kind of keep it at 90. You know.
Okay.
So we're gonna do our best, and even if that means less information or extra shows, we'll probably do more in the bonus content. But that's really my goal, is to do less 3-hour shows. So I know how much you guys love that, but that's why you're going to have to become a Patreon subscriber so you can get more bonus content, because we don't feel like we've flushed everything out. Then we're just going to hit pause and say, hey, you want to hear the rest of the show? You got to become a Patreon subscriber. I have next week off, and so I'm, on my week off in July, I always get the itch to change everything. Like, I changed the podcast artwork. Not sure how I feel about it yet, but I wanted a little more color to stand out. But we'll see. We'll see. Right. But Patreon changes, studio changes, video changes, assistant changes.
Okay.
All kinds of stuff going on. So, as usual. So, stay tuned for that. Reinhold, happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
Have
a great birthday.
Let's go around the table. Final thoughts for this episode. Harry, show them how it's done.
Okay. First off, I also like to say happy birthday, Ryan.
Thank you.
Wrapping up this episode, so when it comes to gun and gun safety, it's also very important. It's just like, even though I'm going to try to go through gun safety with Spangle like this tomorrow, if he continues with guns, I will still encourage him to take a regular gun safety course from a certified instructor. It's because one, can I overlook something? Heck yeah. Do I take a safety course? I've probably taken one every 5 years because there's too much, because if something goes wrong, it can go wrong bad.
Right.
So it's just practice your safety. That's tantamount. Like, to me, like, if you're safe with your gun, you're better within this. Someone's like, I'm the best aim. But if you're unsafe, I don't care.
Right.
You're unsafe with your gun, and I don't want to be nowhere near with you with a gun. That's like, I'm so glad a lot of the gun owners at Porkfest has stepped up over the years. Some gun owners were very irresponsible at Porkfest and so for several years, and a lot of the gun community there did step up and started doing their thing, having training classes, because there was legit someone walking around with a Barrett 50 BMG at Porkfest, pointed down, like, well, let's point it down. It's a 50 BMG in a granite state.
What does that mean?
It's a big
50 caliber bullet, and it's pointed straight down. It's not going after the bullet, but it's everything around us is granite. It's going to ricochet, and it's going to destroy whatever it hits after that.
Stop being extra, okay? Yeah. Libertarians, stop being extra for attention.
Right,
I'm sorry your dad didn't love you the way he should have, but stop it.
Yeah, that's all it was. It's like, wow, you have a 5 grand rifle walking around. Awesome. Why? Did you want to, like, there's other ways to show that you have money, okay? No one is impressed, you know?
No, it's about showing I'm the true Scotsman in the group.
Explain
the concept of no true Scotsman, Reinhold. You know, dude, I hear that phrase all the time, and I kind of vaguely know it, but I figured you might.
I don't remember the, off the top of my head, I don't remember the background of why it's Scotsman, but it's basically the idea that you're trying to say that this is what something is when there's no real full definition of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah. A little bit like dogma.
And I know it's a fallacy, I just can't remember the... The
no true Scotsman or appeal to purity is an
appeal to purity. That's it.
An appeal to purity is an informal fallacy in which one attempts to protect a universal generalization from counterexamples by changing the definition in an ad hoc fashion to exclude the counterexample. Rather than denying the counterexample or rejecting the original claim, this fallacy modifies the subject of the assertion to exclude the specific case or others like it by rhetoric without reference to any specific objective rule. No true Scotsman would do such a thing, i.e. those who perform that action are not part of our group and thus criticize the group. It is attributed to a British philosopher, Anthony Flew, because the term originally appeared in Flew's 1971 book, An Introduction to Western Philosophy. So that's interesting. I figured it'd be older than that, but person A, no Scotsman put sugar on his porridge. Person B, but my Uncle Angus is a Scotsman and he put sugar on his porridge. Person A, yes, but no true Scotsman put sugar on his porridge. So
when you hear people say no real libertarian would do this or no libertarian, you know, you're not a libertarian because you did this and this and this.
Right.
So, like no true libertarian would believe that taxation is allowed.
Right, exactly right. All right, so final thoughts, Reinhold.
Well, done.
Oh, okay. Well, hurry it up then.
All right, sorry. My last thing is, I'd like to thank Jason for with the coffee maker and the water.
My pleasure.
I'm so glad.
Thank you for sharing with me.
Man, you drank two of those, huh?
They're really good.
You going to drive home?
Yeah, I think I'll be good.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe get it.
He's got a little coffee to get him going, though.
That's right.
Okay, now I'm done. I'm sorry.
All right. Reinhold?
Just wanted to just go back to what we were talking about with libertarians and how the culture, I think, is. I don't know if it's so much that we need to start refocusing on what libertarianism is because we've got so many new people coming in from all different angles that maybe some refreshers need to be done, or if it's just a case of we just need to keep making sure those conversations are happening and they'll grow into the right frame of mind. But the bordertarians really kind of concern me, and I just want to make sure that people understand why that's not a good thought process going forward. So,
okay. Jason.
Yes, thank you. Yes, and happy birthday again,
Reinhold. Thank you very much.
Hope it's a good one. I'm sorry you had to spend it with me. thank you very much, both Harry and Chris, for inviting me and letting me come on and be part of this. It's a real pleasure. and then as far as my final thought, you know, with talking about all the new libertarians, one of the things that I experienced, I'm sure everybody can relate to this, first kind of coming into the philosophy and understanding what it was and kind of getting out, especially on social media, was I just didn't know how nasty other libertarians could be to each other. and so it was very off-putting at first. But, you know, I stuck with it because I believed it, and it was something that I felt was right. Like I knew it was right. So I stuck with it. I learned about it. So it's one thing to correct somebody's philosophy. It's something totally different to belittle them and to make them feel unwelcome.
Sure.
So that'd be my final thought is that, yes, I agree with Reinhold. These conversations need to continue happening. They need to, be respectful, and people need to be humble about the way that they're talking to others, because you don't know where somebody's at in their philosophical understanding.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because in our group, people come in and put up a poll claiming is Reinhold a socialist plant?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And everybody in our group clicks yes, because they're going to troll Reinhold.
Yeah.
But then in the comments, they just start trolling the guy who posted the status, too. Like, you walked into the wrong neighborhood. Because, like, I think in other libertarian groups, it's like an echo chamber. Like, yeah, man, yeah, yeah. But in our group, it's like, it's just literally like, yeah, we're going to make fun of our own and then make fun of you. And at the same time, be really smart about it. It's a fun group to be in, because I think people think they're going to get a lot of yeah mans, and then they get, what are you talking about, you idiot? So sometimes we aren't always polite.
And if I can just I'm sorry, I just thought of this, and I just want to put this out there. I want this to be my final thought. Like, it is not my job to judge somebody. It's not my job to critically evaluate the way that they're living their life. I mean, unless I'm in some sort of position to do that, it's just my job to be friendly and to love them. And that's what I think that's the way we should approach just everybody that you meet, regardless of what their religious or political philosophy may be.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. I want to thank the following people for. So I at the convention, we talked to Sarah Brady Wagner at the convention. And I think if you heard the interview with her, you heard how well spoken she is. She's, you know, just cute as a button, and has crazy purple hair. Very well spoken and just a fun, non-threatening, cute presence. And so I was like, I need to get her doing videos immediately. So you're going to start seeing her face a lot, but we needed video equipment, and we raised about $250 in a matter of 12 hours, I think. So I want to thank Dakota Davis, Samantha Lindsay, Craig DaCosta, Trevor Van Neville, Christy Avery, Joe Houtman, Rebecca Cash, Rob White for their contributions to this project. So now we have a nice little video department, and she's going to be cranking out some videos for us here sooner rather than later. So I want to thank you guys for contributing to that and helping us kind of keep professionalizing what we do. I want to thank Brandon Luke, Craig DaCosta, and Christy Avery for being our $100 a month subscribers, and Jason Doolittle. It's been great having you. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed.
Not disappointed.
Yeah, good. So, yeah, it's I could tell you were a little nervous in the beginning. You're talking
a lot about the convention and Libertarian Party, and, you know, that kind of goes over my head.
Right.
So.
But then we got to the guns, and you were like a kid in a candy store.
Like talking about guns.
Yeah. We should talk more about guns, because libertarians love it. The chat was kind of, and then we started talking about guns, and it's like, put a bayonet on it. So
it's the unicorn launcher. What's that?
Right, yeah. So thanks for everything that you've done for We Are Libertarians and continue to do, because it's, as I was telling you before we went on air, you know, with something like this, as we continue to grow, you've got to keep upping your professionalism, because if you go back and you were to listen to an episode from 4 years ago and watch the video from 4 years ago, do that. Like, literally go to our YouTube channel, watch the stuff that we were putting out in 2015, and then compare it to now. And it's night and day in terms of the difference and the production quality. And as you grow, and as we've gone from 2,500 downloads an episode to sometimes up to 13,000 an episode, but generally around 7 an episode. And since November 2016, we've had that kind of growth. We've grown really rapidly. And so you've got to kind of keep up with that. And people like Jason and Craig DaCosta is always there as well, and Christy Avery and Brandon Luke, you guys have been such great partners in building this along with me, and I thank you for being a part of it, because, you know, we continue to grow and keep impacting people on a broader and broader level because of your financial contribution. So thank you very much for that.
No, like I said, if I could do more, I would.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians. Harry, it's nice to have you. It was, you know, you weren't here Tuesday, but we had Abdul instead, and many people were confused. And like, how did Harry get so old and lose so much hair?
So, well, he did start working at this new job. I would expect that.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, it's going to happen. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I like that it took Abdul to replace me. You know?
Yes.
You
know? It's an honor.
Yeah,
it's an honor. All right. So thanks to Ryan Holt. Thanks to Jason Doolittle. And thanks for Harry for joining me here on this episode of We Are Libertarians. And we will see you next Tuesday.
You're not supposed to burp in the microphone.
Oh, yeah. I promised the listeners I wouldn't.
Yeah.
My bad.
Yeah.
I've been holding it for like 10 minutes.
Have you?
Yeah.